Tonight on The Download, former New York Times ethicist and best-selling author Chuck Klosterman, Conan writer and Chicago stand-up comedian Dion Cole, and poet and commentator Mario Smith. Now here's your host, a man who is declaring for the NBA draft, Justin Kaufman.
Well, it's not the NBA draft, not National Basketball Association, more like the Nominal Burger Association, because I'm hungry. I went out and played hoops this weekend again on the courts, and I'm telling you, I'm really, really good on like the first four or five dribbles. The rest, it just goes downhill real quick.
You're out there playing like in the courts?
Yeah,
like
I go out there. I lace them up tight. I get ready to go. I bounce three, four, five times. I shoot once. I feel good. And then the minute I like have to move, it just goes downhill. Not so good. So
it's funny because every time I pass a park, I always think, I can play. You know, I'm terrible at basketball. Right. But I look at the people playing, and they all look terrible, too. There's nobody good out there.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of, even the guys that look good, there's a lot of shake and bake move.
Yeah.
And then you're like, yeah, but you didn't make it. I've never seen a prolonged, consistent, sort of strong style of play in a playground pickup game.
We were at Washington Park on Saturday or Sunday, and he walked by the court, and there was a game going on, and there was a guy who was dribbling for 20 minutes, just like...
He's practicing.
But not by himself. There's a game going on. He was just like, wasn't practicing, dribbling, like ball handling skills.
Right.
There was a game going on.
He's like the Tim Hardaway, if Tim Hardaway didn't shoot the ball. Right? But there's point guards in history who just don't shoot, right? There's like they're that kind of thing. They're like he's a facilitator. He's like a true facilitator.
That's fine.
He just doesn't pass it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just a dribbler.
It was like a trying out for the Globetrotters.
Yeah. Maybe it's like a style thing.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe you were far enough away and you didn't realize it was just a commercial for dribbling, for a dribbling academy.
I was far away.
You know, so you're like, oh, why doesn't he shoot? But maybe they're shooting video of just him dribbling and dribbling skills because they're like, would you like to dribble like this? Call the website. But you didn't see that because you're far away. That could possibly be it, too. I'm just throwing out some scenarios on why a guy would dribble that much playing pickup basketball. Coming up tonight, it's The Download. With you till 11 o'clock. I'm Justin Kaufman here on 720 WGN. Chuck Klosterman's here. He's asking all the wrong questions. But what if we're wrong? Thinking about the present as if it were the past. That's his brand new book, and it's amazing. I'm so excited to talk to Chuck about his book. He was here just this week for Chicago Ideas Week. So we'll talk with him about this book and the questions he asks. I mean, it's questions that are essentially questions that we just never ask anymore. I mean, like simple things like gravity. We just assume Isaac Newton was right. Gravity is gravity. Okay. But you know what? There was a different theory before that apple fell on his head. And there are theories out there that say Isaac Newton's not right. So he just wants us to get back to the idea of maybe asking more questions. So we'll talk with Chuck Klosterman coming up at the big table tonight here on The Download. So much to get to, so why don't we get to it? We'll take a break here. When we come back, we'll get the carry out. Stay with us. Let's get this show on the road, shall we? We got a great show tonight. Dion Cole is here, Chuck Klosterman. We're going to play The Worst coming up with where we essentially complain about society for prizes. Mary Sue Barrett's back. We're going to talk about how to improve government. Lots to do tonight, so let's get at it. First, the carry out, of course. This is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. GOP leaders are concerned about how little money Donald Trump has in his war chest right now. Trump released numbers, and they are way below what the Democrats and Hillary Clinton have raised. And not to mention that Trump's campaign debt is getting dangerously high, over $45 million in the hole. So what does that mean?
it means nothing. For rich people or politicians, it means nothing. For us, if it were us, the repo guy would be climbing up our balcony to take our grill. Unless this has to do with skin toner. If he can't afford bronzer anymore, yeah, then he'll quit. Pay it back. In other news, whoop, this just in, people really want tickets to Hamilton. They stood in line for them and complained all day about Ticketmaster on Facebook. Reporting live. Russian hackers have moved on from the DNC and now have allegedly hacked the Clinton Foundation. Obsessed much? They really love the Clintons. When reached for comment, Bill Clinton was like, hack away. I got nothing to hide anymore. That's my Clinton right there. I'm going to work on that. Really should have worked on that in the 90s. I don't know. Not much use for it now. The Friends of the Park say the city issued a deadline for today. If they don't agree to a compromise on the Lucas Museum site, George Lucas is going to walk away today. What? That's your strategy, city? To threaten that George Lucas is literally going to leave today if he doesn't get his way? And this ultimatum given to the group who wants him to leave? The city is like that parent in the grocery store. If you don't put that candy bar back right now, we are leaving this store. Yeah, but what about your cart full of groceries? You're just going to leave them there? I call your bluff. In other news, oh, this just in, breaking news, people are really miffed that they didn't get tickets to Hamilton, putting up their second and third Facebook posts, vowing to never use Ticketmaster again and to never see live theater ever, 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 ever again. Frowny face. Back to you. Big vote tomorrow on ride sharing, although whenever I predict a big vote in city council, they just table it or do something wacky like pass it without voting or something soul crushing like that. Some aldermen are pushing for more regulation where Uber and Lyft are saying that they will leave town if they get overregulated. Hey, they could take George Lucas. I hope they don't leave during surge pricing. Man, that could add up quick. Today is Taco Tuesday. What's that mean? Well, it means that Taco Bell gave away free tacos from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. today. Free? Nothing's free. It's just going to cost you later tonight. In other news, this just in, people are now lying and pouting, saying that Hamilton is overrated and they didn't want to see it in the first place. Back to you. In weather, it's nice today, so nice, but look out for tomorrow. It's supposed to be like apocalyptic, or it's going to rain, one of the two. In sports, the Cubs lost yesterday to the Cardinals. Daddy, what's the word lost mean? They lace them up again tonight at Wrigley. The White Sox took an extra inning game against the Red Sox yesterday, as Jose Abreu hit a game-winning double against closer Craig Kimbrel. Now, come on! Win tonight! Two in a row! Chris Sale on the mound, going for 12. Basketball news. The NBA draft is on Thursday, and the Bulls have the 14th overall pick. Not a lot of stars come out of the 14th pick. Mateen Cleaves, anybody? Anybody interested in a Ronnie Brewer, perhaps? The Bulls do have some trade bait, but will they act this offseason? The big free agent target is Kevin Durant, who will host teams in L.A. in the coming weeks like a boss. Rumor has it that he's showing interest in joining the Golden State Warriors. Come on. That's so lame. Who cares? That's boring. I mean, if I were him, I'd join like the Sacramento Kings, right? Like do the LeBron it. LeBron it. That's what everyone should do now. LeBron it. Could the Bulls be interested in Kevin? I don't even know why I even brought that up. That's not going to happen. I say the Bulls just trade their roster straight up with Philadelphia. Or woo the Timberwolves to Rosemont. That could work, second team. Is there any truth to the rumors that the Knicks want Derrick Rose? Hey, we'll trade Derrick Rose to New York for, the original cast of Hamilton? That's a good deal. The Blackhawks schedule's out, and guess what? They play everyone. And finally tonight, breaking news. Looks like they got tickets. Hooray! They are going to see Hamilton after all. And that concludes essentially all of Facebook for the entire day. So nauseating, but back to you. That's the carryout for June 21st, 2016, which I thought was the first day of summer, but I guess that was yesterday. Gonna have to change the sign.
More to come here on The Download. Coming up, why is government inefficient? How can we make it more efficient? We're improving government. That's what we're doing today. That's what we've decided to do on The Download tonight. That's coming up next. Mary Sue Barrett's here. We'll do that after the news. It's 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right. We're back after the news. We're going to talk about government efficiency, a new segment I like, Rob, called How to Improve Blank. That's the new segment. It was going to be government or grocery stores, but we're going to start with government.
All right.
Does that sound good to you?
Can do it. Some sort of self-checkout line going on here.
Yeah,
maybe?
Right. For government. We'll figure that out, right? Self-checkout lines for government. Where were you yesterday? Baddish was in.
A little under the weather.
Oh, nice.
I'm good. I rebounded well, I'm at 100% now. I'm ready to dig in the corners, back up against the wall.
That's
come
right.
out swinging.
we had to call up the rookie from AAA. And Roger Baddish, the young punk.
He's a more than capable fill-in, believe me. No. Sometimes maybe even better.
Yeah, so download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at 8 o'clock, Chuck Klosterman, former ethicist at the New York Times, author of But What If We're Wrong? Thinking about the present as if it were the past. Chuck Klosterman's going to be my guest at the big table. Can't wait to talk with him. He's great. He's one of the founding editors of Grantland. He's been a contributor to so many different publications. It's crazy. Your head spins at at all the places he's worked. He's also, like I said, an ethicist at the New York Times. He also is a contributor to This American Life. So we'll talk with Chuck Klosterman coming up at 8 o'clock. Well, a couple weeks back, we had the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council in, Mary Sue Barrett. She's on the program. She's talking about why Chicago was losing population. And I really liked the conversation. I reached out to Mary, said, Mary Sue, come on back on the regular. You should come back. You should, instead of just coming in when we have these gloom and doom stories, we should try to pick apart what we were talking about to find out a little bit more about the place where we live, this region. So I sort of have an idea for a segment called How to Improve Blank. It's a segment that takes a look at the big ticket items of our time. So politics, money, technology, even specific stuff like how to improve grocery stores. There's a lot of great ideas on that. Every time we do the worst, people are like, can't believe you how bad this is. But tonight, let's start with an issue that seems to be on the forefront of Illinois residents' minds. And that, of course, is government. How do we improve government? More particularly, government efficiency. It's something that's been in the political stratosphere of late, from consolidating townships and districts to asking for term limits for our lawmakers, or the dreaded P word, privatization. All this under the looming problem we have where we just don't have a state budget. Your ideas on how to improve government efficiency, 312-981-7200. Let's do the work that we pay others to do. Mary Sue Barrett, president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. Welcome back to the download. Good to see you.
Great to be back.
All right, so let's get into this. Government efficiency. When we talk about government, and we were just kind of talking about this before we came on, government really is just a fancy word for services.
I agree, and our expectation should be that they're high quality and reasonable cost. When you live in a place here in Illinois, especially at this moment, it's very easy to get cynical and a little bit down. In fact, we do top the list here in a way you don't want to top the list. We have more units of local government than any other place in the country. In fact, we're not exactly sure how many units of government. It's in the ballpark of 7,000. But because there's poor reporting, you can't track, you can't compare. It's very hard to hold those accountable. So there's a growing movement to tackle this beast. Mm-hmm. And I think that will only lead to good things.
So that's one thing we can do to improve government, of course. But let's talk about why that is. Why does the state of Illinois have more units of government than anywhere else in the union?
Well, there's some quirks based on our tax policy. The fact that we rely more on the property tax than most other places to pay for government means that when you bump up against the maximum tax caps on those and you have a service that there's pressure to deliver, it drives decision makers in the past, and that's become the trend, to create a single purpose unit of government. So there are these road districts and lighting districts and even a district for one railroad overpass. It's very inefficient. It is the opposite of what we want, which is local accountability, because they're invisible.
It's essentially a stopgap. It's the idea that we can't charge or we can't tax anymore. So let's quickly make a new unit of government so we can pay for some other services. And it's easy to do in Illinois. Easier than other places.
It is. And when you have state statutes that lay out how to create a unit of local government, fairly straightforward, and don't say anything about how to get rid of a unit of government, we end up with all these things on the books. It's very, very difficult to sunset anything or to consolidate or to work across boundaries. So that is been a wake-up call, and a bunch of organizations have come together under the banner of Transform Illinois. So groups like the League of Women Voters has recently joined us, Better Government Association, my organization, which is called the Metropolitan Planning Council, and then some of our public sector partners. Dan Cronin is really the the band leader on this.
Chairman of the board in DuPage.
DuPage County Chair. And it was just 4 years ago that that county, initially we wanted these powers to go to every county, but DuPage was able to push it through when it wasn't able to be accomplished statewide. But they were given some basic powers for the entities that they appoint, that the chairman of DuPage County appoints to be able to go through a process of public input and getting rid of some of those units. So one that happened this week is a small lighting district, and it is surrounded by Naperville. So it was a subdivision that was created. And in the 1970s, when the developer ran into some trouble, he stopped paying his electricity bills. And so they had to create a unit of government to take care of lighting. There are 300 some homes in this. It's called Century Hill Lighting District. There were 77 poles, 77 lights, and they had a budget of $17,000. So since the 1970s, this entity, you know, same people, no staff, trying to figure out how to operate more effectively, and they were very happy to turn over their responsibilities to a division of DuPage County. So here's, you know, check one off.
We got one.
We got one.
We should ring a bell.
6,999, right. But it's actually a little less depressing than that. The momentum is growing, and I think Springfield has a role to play, as well as local leaders and groups like ours, to support and say, hey, let's shine the light on those that are really inefficient, which I've got stories.
Right.
And let's give awards, and let's shine the positive spotlight on those that are really being innovators.
Well, that seems to be the big issue, and we'll continue the conversation. Let's take a quick break. We'll continue the conversation about how do we improve government? How do we make it more efficient? Obviously, taking on the districts and the units of government is one way to do so. Let's talk about politics, privatization, and all the other P words that we can't. Mary Sue Barrett is the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're talking about how to improve government. Government efficiency is our topic tonight, our monthly segment with the Metropolitan Planning Council and President Mary Sue Barrett. 312-981-7200. All right, so let me go to the text, because there's some great stuff coming in, because essentially we're going to come up with the creative ideas, because politics gets in the way of creative ideas getting out of Springfield, Congress, anywhere to get anything done. So let's go to the calls. This text, 224, says, why can't we just determine total revenue, local, state, or federal, divide by the number of legislators? Each legislator gets a debit card with that amount. They can spend it on whatever projects they want. When it's gone, they cannot vote for any more expenditures. That would be accountability. Mary Sue?
I love the creativity of it. So let me take the idea and move it over into the local government sphere, because our state reps and state senators in Springfield are not the ones delivering local services. But take something that every community has, water treatment or 911 services. Mm-hmm. I think those are among the most promising examples of it's really inefficient to do it on the micro local level. So if we had better information, which is, you know, step one, about how much this community pays for that service, or costs them versus another community, then we could apply some pressure on those that are less efficient and drive them towards consolidation.
There are situations where water treatment costs differently from one community to the other?
Absolutely. There's different technology, different age of systems, different employee counts. So all of that's going to drive the decisions about how much things cost. Around Illinois, there are township governments, and a number of them have the same boundaries as a city. So Evanston, to their credit, a couple of years ago, merged the township into the city of Evanston and got rid of unit of government.
There you go.
There we go. We got another one.
Hit the bell.
In Belleville, in downstate, far southwest Illinois, they've recently done the same thing. And they were able to document and got very strong support for when they talked about how they spent more money on personnel than they did on distributing resources. Township had a very narrow role.
How often has that happened where the townships or the units of government are set up essentially for people to get jobs? You know, you hear about this, and I hear about it all the time, and politicians will always talk about corruption or pork spending or the idea that someone just has a job because that's essentially some sort of political payback. Is that something that comes along with all these units of government?
I'm not such a cynic that it's a starting point. The starting point is some service that needs to be delivered. But when you go right to the solution of, well, we're going to come up with our own local body to do that on our own, you're off on the wrong track.
Yeah.
911 services is another example where because there's a sophisticated technology and high costs and rapid evolution of those that technology, communities have on their own, without a mandate, have really been driving towards consolidating services. So there's all sorts of sub-regional, county-wide examples of shared 911 services. So if we're cynical about, hey, government's never going to change, I think there's lots of evidence. There was lots of evidence in Springfield this past mm-hmm. session. I look back at 2015. There was really, you know, very few victories and very few bills introduced. This time there was a groundswell of 27 bills introduced. We got the DuPage model extended to Lake and McHenry counties. Now we'll have, once the governor signs the bill, those powers. So yes, one of the barriers or roadblocks is when people perceive their job is threatened.
Right.
But I think we can stack up the arguments for it.
Okay, so like a big whole, like you just mentioned Lake and McHenry counties.
Yes.
There's a good text that just came in, just 708, saying, why counties? Why do we not just have state and local government? Why is that a place where we can look to say, let's rethink the way we do government? Right now we have state, we have city, we have county. There's all sorts of things, and they all provide different services. But is there a way to consolidate that to be just one kind of government as opposed to three?
Well, that opens up maybe a whole nother show for us, Justin, because well, I think there's a very interesting
3 minutes to fix
global debate about, you know, what's the right level. But think of a state with 11 million people. You got 102 counties. In northeastern Illinois alone, there are 274 municipalities. So states too big because we're so diverse and municipalities are too small. So counties are one model. I think joint services like sharing water treatment could happen with a cluster of six communities that are along mm-hmm, a river mm-hmm, corridor mm-hmm. or around some other corridor that makes sense. So we ought to be giving more tools and encouragement from Springfield, more pressure from the public to say, hey, we expect to know how much things cost and we expect to see progress on this consolidation so that there's fewer horror stories. Dan Cronin has lots of them. I think my favorite is the snowplow story, if we have a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
So he did a ride-along with his crew in DuPage County, and they were going down, I think, County Farm Road, and the crew put the plow down, and then a few seconds later, they picked it up, and then they put it down, and they picked it up, and he looked at him and said, what are you doing? And he said, well, we got to give those guys something to do. We are on a county road here, and then there was a township road. He said, you're on the right. same road. Well, it was different jurisdictions. This does not make sense to people.
Right.
It's got to change.
And I think what happens a lot of times when we talk about government efficiency is we talk about the services or cutting the services to try and balance a bottom line. And the services that are being cut usually are things that people count on, rely on. We're talking about people who are on the poverty line or below it. Consolidating government, making it more efficient, talking about the issues we're talking about at a level that are, we're obviously just theorizing, but at a point where we can find a way to consolidate this stuff actually opens up the door for government to do what it does, which is to provide services for those who need it.
Absolutely. And I think that's how we leapfrog over the concerns about jobs and turf is to remind people that we do have these expectations for quality services from our government, and we're sinking in the muck of our pension and budget problems. If we had fewer, more efficient governments, we'd have a smaller problem there, and we could deliver better services.
I just say this, out of curiosity, a layman trying to forgive my ignorance, but is Illinois' pension problem, which is one of the worst in the nation, because we have all these townships and government in which they all owe pension to employees?
It is a contributor. The largest problem is that we promised to pay,
yeah,
we
right.
didn't pay.
Of course.
But the cost of what is owed is larger when it's inefficient. And if we have more workers in this pension fund because we haven't fully explored if there's a better way to do it. The other piece is voter participation. And a study in DuPage, again, showed that you paid higher taxes if you had 16 units of local government in your area than if you had 12. And then we've seen the slide downward trend of voter participation.
Mostly because they're checked out. Voters are like, I don't know what I'm even voting for in this case.
They're confused, they're frustrated, and, you know, really, they don't know who their lighting district commissioner is.
You heard it here, Mary Sue Barrett going for a dictatorship. We need one leader, that's it. No, that's
not exactly. Actually, it's about making government work.
All right, so we got to continue this conversation. We are on to something. I feel like together, Mary Sue Barrett and the Download Nation, we are going to fix what ills Illinois. Mary Sue Barrett, president of Metropolitan Planning Council. You got to come back next month, okay?
Excellent. Thanks.
All right. Such good comments here. 815 says, forget about consolidation. Think more about privatization. Bid out private companies. Have it be more efficient to survive, and competition keeps it honest. Government agencies have a track record of inefficient behavior, so why bother? I think I there's something to that, although we've seen what's happened with parking meters where you essentially lose that income. Their revenue.
But you still need an element of oversight, right, though, to make sure that it's doing what it says it's going to do.
Absolutely. And then that'll be another piece of government to do that. So that's the problem with privatization, is somebody's in charge of making sure that they're doing their job.
Right.
There's another one here saying that get rid of fire protection districts and go with a metropolitan fire department. Consolidate small suburban police departments. Make it metropolitan, regional. That's not a bad idea. Yeah, all these things are interesting. I mean, I don't know how you would even start in terms of having to do that, but it seems to me that if we want to avoid being in the same problems we're here in 50 years, 100 years, whatever it might be, we have to start thinking a little bit more holistic about changing the way we do things in the state of Illinois as opposed to nickel and diming at every level and kicking the can down the road, right? And I just sounded like that was a political version of like a baseball player who, you know, just one day at a time.
Just get rid of the unions. Forget about it. Done.
That's it. Done.
Done. You know what? I just solved all the problems. Goodbye, unions.
Goodbye, unions. Now we can pay the workers 10 cents an hour, just like we wanted to.
I'm just kidding, of course.
Of course, yeah.
And that black Jeep in the parking lot's not mine.
All right, so coming up, Chuck Klosterman's going to be here. He's the author of the new book, But What If We're Wrong? Thinking about the present as if it were the past, former ethicist of the New York Times. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest may have stumbled upon the question of our time. But what if we were wrong? It's not just a great question, but it's the name of Chuck Klosterman's new book, But What If We Were Wrong? Thinking about the present as if it were the past. The book challenges our assumptions and guides us and asks questions like, how much of history is classified as true simply because it can't be proven false? Chuck Klosterman is a best-selling author. He's also served as the ethicist for the New York Times. He's also one of the founders of the website Grantland, and he's essentially written for every publication known to man. Chuck Klosterman is in Chicago for a talk at Chicago Ideas Week, and he's my guest tonight at the big table. Chuck Klosterman, thanks for being here.
Hey, it's great to be here, and the table is big. lying to your audience.
We brought out the big one for you. Yeah. I really, really enjoyed the book. I really feel like this is a groundbreaking moment for me to question everything that I knew to be true. So let's start there. What I wanted to start with was just the concept of the book overall. And what I really liked was objective wrongness. Explain objective wrongness.
Everybody can be wrong in their personal life. They can make a mistake in a relationship or a mistake at a job, and they're wrong about what they believe. But I'm very interested in the idea of collective wrongness, things that we're all sort of wrong about, that they don't even really – a question that doesn't seem like a question because no one's even asking it.
Right.
It's just sort of to be assumed. Now, in terms of objective wrongness, I think what you're probably talking about is sort of the difference between being wrong about something that is, in theory, objective, like science or math,
right,
something that is really totally data-based and doesn't seem to be made to be flexible, as opposed to subjective wrongness, which is like how we look at art, for the most part, we assume that we're going to sometimes be wrong about art and the way we view it, and culture and the way we perceive it. But the stakes are lower because, you know, what does it mean to have a wrong opinion?
Right, it's an opinion. It's subjective.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, there is a consensus, of course. And as we move forward along the timeline, that consensus sometimes kind of galvanizes into what seems like a real hard truth that isn't that different than objective truth. But there is definitely a chasm between those ideas.
What I really enjoy about this book is I feel like, not unlike the greatest philosophers of our time and ancient Greece and along the way, that this is that kind of book for now. In the way that there are a lot of things that we just take for granted or we assume is truth here. And I'm not talking about news stories or even theories about sports teams, things like that. We're talking about things like gravity. Hmm. Like where they – like the idea of where this kind of stuff – you use that as a great example, gravity, because there was a time when gravity was not thought to be the gravity that we know.
Well, I mean, that is kind of in some ways the origin of a lot of how this book sort of unspooled. One of the first people I interviewed for this book were some sort of like high-profile scientists, one of them being Brian Greene, who's kind of like a rock star physicist, a string theory guy. He appeared on an episode of The Big Bang Theory. And the way whenever I just had a conversation with anyone like this is I would go in and I would frame it like this. I would say, I'm not trying to contradict your view of reality because in all likelihood, your view is my view. I don't know anything that you don't, certainly, and you know way more. Mm-hmm. I'm just asking, what is the possibility or the likelihood that some of these fundamental core beliefs could be eventually perceived as absurd as the way we believe things from the 1400s or whatever? And then to be safe, I was like, no, I know some things are off the table. Like, I know gravity is not really up for debate. And he said, well, no, it's not. That's not true at all. In 500 years, our view of gravity might be completely different. And that's when I thought, like, this book might work. If the thing I'm using is the unchangeable idea is actually changeable, I guess everything really is on the table. But, you know, it's a crazy thing. Like, our view of gravity really – or the modern view of gravity, let's say, starts kind of in the 1600s with Isaac Newton. It's about 350 years old. But for about 2,000 years before that, the belief in gravity was based on Aristotle, which is a period when science was interlocked with philosophy more than math. And what Aristotle believed and sort of what became the general belief was that, like, a rock doesn't float because a rock wants to be on the ground. The rock has agency. It desires to be on the ground. It wants to be in the center of the universe. And, of course, Earth is the center of the universe. So the center of the Earth is the dead center. So a rock is trying to get to the center of the Earth, and the soil is just stopping it, you know. Now, for 2,000 years, we laugh, right?
Right. But that was the belief.
Yes. But that lasted about 2,000 years. So our current explanation and understanding of gravity, which is, like, again, Newton and Einstein, basically, 350 years old, much more sophisticated and much more nuanced, but it's not like the people in the previous period were like, we have this idea about gravity. We know it's crazy. It's like it made sense to them.
No one questioned it.
Yes.
The apple fell and hit the head, if that's what happened. No one was questioning gravity and the properties of gravity.
So, I mean, I guess there is sort of a larger question above this. It's like, what is the benefit of questioning gravity? Like, does it make more sense to just say gravity as we know it is real? Or does it make more sense to say, well, I'm 99.9% certain our understanding of gravity is accurate? The second statement obviously is safer. But if you open up the window to be wrong about gravity, you're essentially opening up the window to be wrong about anything. Right. And that shifts the entire perception of reality.
You know, I was going to save this till later, but I guess it applies here. I mean, you go out of your way at the end of the book to talk about the idea that this it's not necessarily dangerous. It's detrimental. The concept of not asking questions or just this concept. Talk about that.
I didn't want to somehow suggest that we're really putting ourselves at risk by using sort of whatever limited technical abilities or mental facilities we have to understand the world. There's no huge risk. It's not like we're putting our society in jeopardy. However, I feel like the sense of certitude that seems to accompany intellectual life now and intellectual discourse, this idea that in order to sort of appear intelligent, you almost have to be fascist in your belief in your own ideas, that, for lack of a better term, is just kind of annoying. It makes life a worse way to be. It doesn't have to be that way. Like, you can express an idea and say, this is what I believe. This is my reason for it. You don't have to also add, and if you disagree with me, you're an idiot. Or somehow the conversation we're having is not sort of an exchange of ideas, but me hammering your ideas away. I just think that there's something socially detrimental in the level of certitude that seems to exist in this culture, which, you know, I'm only 44, but it seems to have pretty radically amplified in my lifetime.
Yeah. Chuck Klosterman is the author of But What If We Are Wrong? It's thinking about the present as if it were the past. Chuck's in town for Chicago Ideas Week. We'll continue our conversation here on The Download in just a second. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio at the big table, Chuck Klosterman. He is the author of But What If We Were Wrong? Thinking about the present as if it were the past. Chuck Klosterman, former ethicist for the New York Times, also a best-selling author and founder of the website Grantland. And I mean, you've written for pretty much every publication in New York City.
Seems like it. Actually, that's not true. There's some I still haven't
hit. You got to get working. Yeah. Before we went to the break, we talked about the idea of gravity and questioning. And we talked about that objective wrongness. On the other side was the idea of art where, you know, and you used the example of Moby Dick, this book that everybody knows to be the greatest piece of literature. And when somebody makes a comment like on a Yelp page or whatever, like, I really hate this book. They're almost seen as contrarian. Their opinion doesn't necessarily matter because it's going against the grain that everybody, even though maybe I hadn't even read the book, thinks it's the greatest thing.
The knowledge of Moby Dick makes that kind of negative review seem pretty performative.
Right.
Like, it doesn't seem as though this person is taking a cold reading of Moby Dick and being like, I came across this book. There was a whale on it. Seemed cool to me. I read it. It's not very good. I mean, the person knows what they're doing, that they're establishing this position that doesn't have any impact on the canonical nature of Moby Dick. Like, Moby Dick is in a canonical silo. It doesn't matter what people really say about it now. That's just sort of reflecting something on the critic. But, I mean, the trajectory of Moby Dick is just an interesting situation. I mean, like, Herman Melville writes this book. He believes it's going to be his masterwork, his masterpiece.
This is mid-19th century. Yeah.
And, you know, the book comes out, and it gets mixed reviews. And it doesn't really sell that great. And he had been a commercially viable author before, but this was a pretty devastating blow. I mean, basically ended his career as a writer. He was a poet for a while after that, and you know, an alcoholic. He worked in the customs department, and he kind of died very depressed, the way it seems. And then after World War I, many years after his death, the book was sort of rediscovered and reinterpreted. And it wasn't now just a good book, but it was the book. Like, it was the great American novel. Now, when people use that term, what they're really talking is about a text that sort of reflects the idea of what Moby Dick did to the culture. And, so the question becomes, why did that happen? Well, on one hand, there's sort of like if we were in a literary class, they would say, well, you know, these guys went to World War I and they came back. And they had this experience fighting kind of almost a faceless enemy that they didn't really relate to, you know, the idea of Germany. And they had this brotherhood among soldiers. And they had to learn all this technical information about guns and war strategy. So they get a book like Moby Dick where they're fighting this whale, which sort of symbolizes the unknown enemy. And they have the Brotherhood of the Sailors, which reminds them of being in the army. And, you know, Moby Dick has whole sections in the book on, like, how to tie knots and stuff like that. Like real technical minutia. But a guy would be like, that sort of reminds me of putting a gun together or whatever. You know? Now, that's sort of like the rational explanation we use. But in truth, I think it's probably far more arbitrary than that. They needed a book to represent this. This is the book that got selected. So we reverse engineer this explanation as to why it happened. This is not in any way to criticize the content of Moby Dick. It is a great novel. But did it have to be that novel is the question. Did Melville have to write about whaling? He had experience as a whaler. What if he had climbed a mountain? Could that have been the plot? What if he had been, you know, a sheep herder or something?
Yeah.
Could that have been the premise? It's almost as though we need certain things to occupy different spaces in the culture. And something has to have enough merit to get in that conversation. But once it's in the conversation, then it's almost like a random, capricious experience. It's like something is going to be selected by chance, but we can't feel like it's chance. Mm-hmm. We don't want to say we love this novel because, we're going to love something. So then we make up the explanation, and I think so much of art history is based on this.
You take on history in this book, and there's a whole great chapter on the past. And the theories, and you get into what conspiracy theories are, but theories, but the concept of what we know as our past, as our history, as our human history, may just be a complete fabrication. There are theories out there that Attila the Hun and Genghis Khan were the same person, and we just continually cycle the same stories as a way to, as you said, like almost like as a placeholder.
Yeah. And it's not as though I'm saying believe all conspiracy theories. Most conspiracy theories are wrong.
Right.
But what happens is this, we come to these conclusions based on a limited amount of information that's in many ways impossible to verify. We can use things that seem to supply verification, but it's not like a hard verification. So they become difficult or really impossible to contradict, because if you contradict those ideas, you're using the same kind of flawed data.
Right.
It's not as though we have a history based on shaky ground, and then we have this real solid ground that upends it. It's like it's both shaky. So the story that everyone is familiar with just becomes more and more galvanized. And, here again, what's the problem with this? Is there a problem if it turns out that our understanding of Attila the Hun is false or whatever? Well, I guess not. But that just tells us that, like, our security in the present is not that great. And the way that our period of time is going to be viewed is not going to be the way we think we're seeing it. Yeah,
that's so good, man. You're blowing my mind here.
Well, that's my job, to go from radio station to radio station and blow skull fragments across the booth. Yeah.
Chuck Klosterman is the author of But What If We Were Wrong? Thinking about the present as if it were the past. He's in Chicago for a talk at Chicago Ideas Week. We'll take a quick break for the news. When we come back, I got to ask you about dreams. That's a big part of this book. And also, as a culture, how we do fill in those blanks. And that seems to be, as we've been explaining in the first half here, just about that it's almost a need for us to be able to fill in blanks. And we kind of just go along with it. I'm fascinated by it. Chuck Klosterman, my guest here at the Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio at the Big Table, Chuck Klosterman. He's the author of But What If We Were Wrong? Thinking About the Present as If It Were the Past. Klosterman, of course, best-selling author. He was the ethicist for the New York Times. So many credits to his name. This book really is, to me, you're breaking culture. That's what I love. You're breaking human culture. I love I'm in love with this book. All right, so let's talk about the dreams. You had a great passage in the book with Richard Linklater, just a phone conversation with him about so many things about the past, but really about astrology versus dreams. And I really thought that was something that we ignore dreams as sort of like a flippant thing that happens in our subconscious that we explain to our friends at breakfast, the joke in there. And we believe in astrology as more, why you and I are aligned.
Yeah, well, that's something that Richard Linklater brought up. Now, he's, beyond being one of my favorite directors, he's had two movies, Waking Life specifically about dreaming, and also Slacker has aspects of this too. But we were just sort of talking about the idea of how dreams are perceived, okay? There was a time long ago when dreams were – their importance was much, much greater. They were believed to be ways essentially to astrally project ourselves into different worlds and different realities. And then even in the early 20th century, with Freud and Jung and stuff, dreams were a big deal. Like Freud was a dream head or whatever, And then it slowly started to kind of crumble, this idea that dreams were important. Some guys at Harvard realized or claimed or argued, however you want to look at it, that dreams were really just electrical impulses in the mind. This is true. But what their kind of claim was is that the content doesn't matter much. Like some people even feel that the narrative, way dreams appear, that's something that's not happening at all. We just sort of construct that to explain what has happened in our mind, this leftover thoughts or whatever. So now we're kind of at a point where dreaming is not taken seriously. Like we just – nobody – if somebody wants to talk about their dreams, it's kind of seen as an annoyance. And yet part of me wonders, okay? A third of our life is spent in this metaphysical world that we're creating, and that there are certain aspects of dreams that do seem oddly universal. Many, many people across all cultures and across all time tend to have dreams of losing your teeth.
Right.
Like that's one of many dreams, the flying dream.
Right,
all
going out with your pants off or whatever.
So sometimes I wonder, are we underrating the importance of dreams simply because we have no valuable way to study them? Like someone can tell you what they dream, but you can't get inside their skull and see what it looks like. So it's not something that can really be in any way studied in a serious sort of reasonable manner. So it's almost because it's impossible, we've elected to decide it's just a waste mm-hmm. of time. And I wonder if there could be a future world, people who have not yet been born, who really change their opinion on this. And they're like, this is a real critical part of the experience of being alive. This is like something that maybe is central to how our brains are built, you know, and if they'll wonder if we really were wrong about our willingness to discount something like this. And then Richard Linklater, who loves dreams, is very much in that corner. I mean, he, you know, he loves dreams.
It's fascinating, too, because as you point out in the book, you know, astrology mm-hmm. has become this thing that people really believe in. They map the stars.
Although I think there is an explanation for why that is. OK, I think one explanation is that it's a little bit like science, because you're looking at stars and there is an element of hard reality there. But also there is sort of a commercial benefit to astrology. I mean, you know, you can be an astrologer in the newspaper or online right. or whatever, you know. You can sort of build an industry around this thing that people seem to be attracted to, partially because I think that as society changes, we lack those universal experiences. You see this on the internet when somebody dies and the rush to all sort of collectively mourn. I think part of the reason that happens is because, you know, there used to be only three television networks, so everyone was watching The Tonight Show or whatever. There were these things that all people were doing, and you felt a little bit like there was a collective society. And there's less and less of that as things proliferate. So we look for opportunities where things can be shared. And in a weird way, astrology really is a big shared experience. If you're born in June, this is what your life is like. You know, I think people like that.
They do. There's so many more things. I mean, obviously, you had a piece about rock music you pulled out for the New York Times. The other one I thought was really interesting was the chapter on color. Mm. And you used the example on the internet not too long ago about the dress, whether it's gold and white or blue and black. I think that's what it was.
I mean, it was just, you know, for people who don't remember this, they'll be like, what are you talking about? Everybody who does will be like, I remember those 3 days when everybody was obsessed with this idea. This woman said, my mom was going to get this dress or something for a wedding, and we can't figure out what color it is. And everyone, you know, I remember the night this happened, my wife was looking at it, and she's like, I don't understand what the joke is here. Like, she was looking at the dress. She's like, I don't get why people are pretending this is not, like, whatever she
blue
believed,
or whatever. Yeah.
And then I looked at it and I had the opposite reaction, and she really thought I was just being a jerk, you know. But then we kind of looked on the internet and realized that this was happening everywhere. Like, marriages were breaking up over this. And there was a evening where I think that there was a real sort of unease that maybe we were all seeing the color blue differently, and maybe we always have, and maybe this dress somehow fell on the perfect optic line where some people could see it as blue mm-hmm. and then some people could see it as something else. And it kind of harkened back to this argument that actually has quietly existed forever. Like when Homer would write the Odyssey or whatever, he consistently described the color of the ocean as the color of wine red. Okay. That the ocean was the color of red wine. Now, generally, the ocean is not the color of red wine. Also, he was blind, so it was like somebody was telling him this. But regardless, it made people – it's this ongoing question is like, did we use a different sort of criteria for color in the past, and does our perception of color actually change? Like, will people in the future consider orange to be different than what we consider orange? It feels like this should be static. It feels like what we think is the color purple should always be purple. But here again, it doesn't seem to be. It doesn't seem like that's...
And it's fluctuated, like you said, with the wine. And I think it was Aristotle again. Aristotle's made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, well, Aristotle's the smartest guy who was wrong about everything.
Right.
You know, but I mean, like, he would come up with, you know, Aristotle had an idea of, like, you know, why is the sky blue? Okay. Aristotle's theory Now, this is just based on observation, and based just on observation, it's a pretty good one. He was – his belief that like, well, the air is slightly blue. But in the same way that like a glass of water seems clear but a well seems dark, that if you get enough air lined up against each other, that slight blueness sort of blankets each other and the sky looks blue. Here again, if you know nothing about the sky and nothing about science and nothing about light refraction, that seems brilliant. But that's not how it is, you know. But you see, he was the best mind of his time. So we now assume the best minds of our time, these guys must be right.
Right.
But
I think that's the takeaway, is that, that, you know, the best minds of our times, we assume them to be right, but in reality, they're probably wrong.
Well, anybody can be wrong, I guess, is the big thing. I mean, probably a lot of what they're saying is right, but not necessarily everything. And also, there's no harm in wondering that. Like, there's no big mistake or some kind of cultural flaw in admitting that your perception of reality might be wrong. And I don't know why people are so unwilling to do that. I actually find that as I've gotten older, I now realize that, you know, I was more intellectually confident in college when I was dumber. Part of getting smarter is realizing that
you can be wrong.
Mostly. That I can mostly be wrong.
Mostly be wrong.
And that means I'm just self-aware. Yeah.
Chuck Klosterman, the book is called But What If We Were Wrong? Thinking About the Present as If It Were the Past. The book is out. Chuck is in town for Chicago Ideas Week. I can't thank you enough. This book is great, and it was a great conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
You bet.
This download here on WGN Radio with you till 11 o'clock tonight. I'm Justin Kaufman. Chuck Klosterman, I love the concept. Just ask more questions. Not everything is as it seems. It's worth a conversation, at least. Just like with the earlier conversation about fixing government or how to improve government, we don't have the answers. I don't have the authority to be able to say, yes, you're right, we're closing the mosquito abatement district. Ow.
You okay over there?
Yeah, I was acting out as if I was a judge, slammed my hand on the keyboard. But I do love the concept, and Chuck is always up for a good conversation. So good to have him here, and hope he has good luck with the book. The book again is But What If We're Wrong? I said it right at the end. I was so mad. I was like, so what if we were wrong? But it's not. It's what if we're wrong? Only one we in there.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about the present as if it were the past. Coming up, Mario Smith's going to join us, our local poet and commentator. He comes on the show once a month, talk about things happening in his world. You know what we're going to talk about is the cold cases when it comes to violence in Chicago. The case of the woman who was walking out of the Starbucks in the South Loop not too long ago. We saw this terrible story. Where someone was walking next to her who was a target of a drive-by, and they missed and hit her. And up to this point, there's been no movement. You know, for someone caught in the crossfire who worked for the city, you would hope, and this is no indication or any sort of, I'm not criticizing the Chicago Police Department, but I'm just saying this is how society works. It's not as easy as the TV shows make it. Where you snap your fingers and you're like, oh, I know who did it.
Right. Wraps up in an hour.
Yeah, right. Exactly. The first person you see in the show is probably the person who did it. It's not that easy. And we'll talk with Mario about the woman that was shot and killed and someone he went to high school with. And he's kept tabs on what happened since. And we'll talk to him about that case. And I thought it was really interesting today, Mary Mitchell's piece in the Chicago Sun-Times, an op-ed about... Essentially, Superintendent Johnson, Eddie Johnson, for the police department, spoke at the City Club and mentioned that almost all the people that were either shot, killed, or arrested, I can't remember if arrested was involved, but it might have been shot or killed, were all people that the Chicago police were familiar with, meaning they were on a list. They've been involved in gang activity. They've been involved in criminal activity. They know who they are. just by the letter of the law. They can't do anything about it, and they can't go get them. They can't round them up and put them somewhere. That's just not the way that the society works. Mary Mitchell's column went a little too far, maybe, and that's what there was some criticism just about. You can't take away. She sort of looked at it almost like terrorism, saying, well, there has to be something we can do to curb their rights if they're carrying around guns or they're doing something to terrorize neighborhoods. And that's really kind of at the crux of what's happening with the gun control issue in Congress, is about how far are we willing to go to take away rights of American citizens, even if they're doing something wrong. And that's, you know, something that's happening locally. So we'll talk about that as well. Also coming up tonight, very excited about this, Dion Cole, stand-up comedian. This guy's great. Dion Cole is everywhere. He's got a Comedy Central special on Saturday, his first full hour special. And that means a lot because he was on the Def Comedy Jam tour. And he actually tells a story about how he was kicked off the tour because he had had such success. He had actually got up on stage at All Jokes Aside here in Chicago. And he quickly came up with 10 minutes, 15 minutes of material. And then he just toured it. And it got everyone's attention. So he went on the Def Jam comedy tour. And they're like, what's next? What else you got? And he's like, I got nothing. And they're like, that's not how it works. You're fired. So he essentially kicked him off the tour. And he learned that he had to write. And in doing so, he wrote jokes and continued to write jokes. And he caught the eye of Conan O'Brien. He became a writer for Conan O'Brien, the first African-American writer for the Conan O'Brien show. And I think, and I have to check this, but he's one of the first African-American writers in general on late-night TV. He's from Chicago. He's done so much here for not just All Jokes Aside and some of the other clubs that were on the South Side, but also for Jokes and Notes, 47th and King, which today word came out that they're closing that venerable establishment. It's going to be, I think it's through the weekend. They've got the showcase this, I think, on Friday and Saturday, and I think it's closing. Jokes and Notes has been such a tremendous club for so many comedians, young black comedians who've come out from Chicago who now we see and entertaining us in Hollywood. They came out of Jokes and Notes, and they're closing up shop there. So we'll talk with Dion Cole about his recollections of that space. Also talk to him about his career. He's also plays Charlie on Blackish, which is like a star turn. It's like one of those walk-on characters that is sort of unforgettable. So we'll talk to him about that. There's so much to talk to Dion Cole about. We'll talk with him coming up at 9:30. And tonight, the worst, where we complain about the things in our society for prizes. 312-981-7200. You know what's the worst? Facebook when Hamilton tickets go on sale.
Yeah. It was crazy today.
So many screenshots of like Ticketmaster screwing people over. You know what I mean? Like there's like a lot of that, like, look what's happening to me now. It's still and then an hour later, hey, I got tickets. And you're like, well, I don't understand why I got the live Facebook live of you. Like when
just wait the 3 hours.
Wait, yeah, do complain. One post. Yeah. Complain once. Mm-hmm. Either you got them or you didn't. Don't come back 2 hours later and be like, I got tickets, yay. Really? Because the last 7 Facebook posts or social media posts have been how you didn't have tickets and you were cursing the world and everybody in it. I remember when I would try to get tickets, say Guns N' Roses or maybe a U2,
yeah.
A rhythm, or what was it, the Desire, what is the Angels in Harlem, the rhythm and...
Rattle and Hum?
Rattle and Hum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rattle and Hum. You get on the phone. And you'd stretch that phone cord out, and you would try to hit the number to Ticketmaster as fast as you could, and all you'd get was that busy signal.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you also had Facebook, and you could tell people how frustrating that experience was.
Still busy.
Still. This phone is so busy. Picture a phone. That would be great. We should have done that. That would have been great. Because remember, I mean, did you ever do that? Did you ever, like, when you were a kid,
oh, yeah,
be like, I'm going to try to get this? What was, do you remember in your head any of the one? I remember Rattle and Hum being the one because I think I had, like, there was a girl who's like, I really want to go to U2. And I'm like, I'll get those tickets. I'll dial this number 35. And I never got them. Just stayed busy until. So I never got it.
My parents used to drop me off at 95th and Cicero so I could wait outside the Sport Mart.
Oh, nice.
Because that was the Ticketmaster. They had the Ticketmaster
like
inside the Sport Mart.
Nice.
So I'd wait out there for tickets like a dummy.
I had a whole different experience one time, and I don't know how this happened. It was almost like the machine in Big. It was like a strange magical machine. But the coconuts at the merchandise mart. Now this is obviously dating. It's not. There's no such thing anymore, and maybe it never existed. But we would go in there, and they had a Ticketmaster, and I could get. And this would be late '90s tickets to Bears games.
What?
Yeah, you go in there, and be like, I'd love to get tickets to a Bears game, and what do you have? And then they'd pull up on the computer, and they're like, we got these. I was able to get. This is before the advent of StubHub, where they just buy it all and then up, you know. Mark it up 6,000%, or like the sports teams do now, do that themselves.
Yeah.
But I remember I would go in there and be like, yeah, I don't know if you guys, do you guys do Bears tickets? Yeah, we do Bears tickets. Do you got anyone coming up here in the game four? And they're like, we got game four, third row, face value. And I went to two Bears games in that season. I think it was actually, you know what it was? It was a 2001 season that they went to the playoffs with Dick Geron as a coach, and then quickly were shown how much of a failure they were in the playoffs when the Eagles dismantled them.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Donovan McNabb.
But I remember it. Like, we were able to get two sets of tickets. I think it was two tickets each.
Somehow gaming the system through coconuts?
Coconuts was like the special magic one. Yeah. It was like before all of this went haywire, you could just go to the coconuts. And then coconuts went out of business, and that's when all went wrong with the world. This was pre 9/11, the coconuts. So we need coconuts for days like Hamilton, like today. You need a coconuts.
You do need. I think that's the world does need more coconuts.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking? Should we do a Kickstarter to open up a new coconuts? They are selling this building. We can maybe lobby the new owners to open up a coconut.
Yeah. I got some VHS tapes I could probably sell.
Oh, this is so good. 630 says, back in the day, the worst was waiting in line for tickets at Carson's in Yorktown Mall.
Yeah.
Right away.
Another one, Carson's.
You get a pizza for that. Only to find out the employees opened the inside mall entrance first. So essentially the employees were getting the tickets before the people did. Yeah. That's the perks of working at the coconuts.
That I've also waited at the Carson's, and they're the kind of gaming the system. You know, the Carson's in Evergreen Plaza was a good one to go to. Not a lot of people would go to that one, as opposed to the other ones in town. So
you can get tickets there.
Go early. Not as many people waiting for the rock show that I might want to attend.
For the Ugly Kid Joe show you're trying to get into? The Faith No More Ugly Kid Joe? That was sold out.
A lot of bad shows, I'm sure.
All right, stay with us. We got a great hour coming up here on The Download. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up after the 9:30 news, Dion Cole. We'll be here. We'll talk about his new Comedy Central special. And then we'll also talk about the demise of the Bronzeville Club Jokes and Notes. Just came out, kind of hit social media this weekend. And then people confirmed it today that Jokes and Notes planning to close. Kind of the worst kept secret, I think. And people knew about it. Mario Smith, our next guest, knew about it. He's a commentator. He's a poet. He's a host of news from the service entrance at WHBK every Thursday in Hyde Park. Also a part of the Harper Court Music Series, which will be next week.
Next week, Wednesday.
On Wednesday.
Yep. Micaiah McCraven is playing.
Oh, nice.
It's going to be dope.
So, but I mean, Jokes and Notes, that's a great club. And a lot of people don't. I mean, if you've never been to Jokes and Notes, it is a club that sort of is a heartbeat for Southside comedy.
Absolutely. I mean, it was the grandchild in some ways of All Jokes Aside, where Robin Harris used to work out, and a lot of great comedians, and Milt Trenier's, and all those great places where Bernie Mac and all that stuff. Them closing I don't know what the circumstances are behind it, because I'm not that close to the situation, so I'm not going to, like, get on here and say something crazy. But it's Kind of sad that it's closing, but I know that Leon Rogers is going to be hosting the final thing. I think Deion's going to be there. I'm sure he's going to be there. I know Marlon Mitchell will probably be there. Lil Rel will probably be there. It'll be some really good guys. It's going to be funny.
This weekend, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be something.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that have been happening in your neck of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, let's talk about politics. Governor Rauner. Kind of a little bit of kerfuffle on the south side. Kerfuffle, I think, is a good...
Kerfuffle?
Yeah.
Can I buy that at a pastry store? Kerfuffle?
You can.
I like kerfuffle.
Frosted and non-frosted.
And you know what almonds on it?
You can get almonds on it, too. You can toast it.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, so to celebrate Juneteenth, the governor was going down to the DuSable Museum. Father Flager said, well, not so fast. We don't want you down here because you've cut services to the poor. There's no balanced budget. You're balancing the budget on the backs of people who live in this community. Talk about that, because that kind of bubbled up a little bit into the news on Monday, but not a huge story, but it was talked about a lot.
It was huge in Blackville. Where all the black people live, because we didn't like it.
What was the deal?
It's a slap in the face, really. Okay, so how about this? Let's say your child, you have a son. Let's say you are the governor. Now, that's a bad analogy. Scratch that.
Okay,
forget all that.
Good.
Let's go
I'm
back.
I'm not a good governor. I'm not a good politician.
I think it's disingenuous for him to come to the city of Chicago, period. Offering up some kind of, like, he's Juneteenth Santa Claus or something.
Like a photo opportunity.
Yeah. Why would you even bother to come here? When the neighborhood you're in surrounding the University of Chicago, those schools are all in trouble. The mental health facilities that are around that DuSable Museum are all closed. And they're not all his fault, but you inherited this mess, as he put it, from the previous governor. And so now the previous governor and that maddening hairstyle of his is in jail. This dude is killing the city and the state by refusing to sign a budget. It doesn't take that long to sign it, but he wants so much for so little. He's not fit to be in the position. And if anybody continues to think he's fit to be in the position, I question their judgment.
Yeah, but I would say, as the governor of Illinois, I mean, he's going out of his way. It would be something if he's like, okay, Juneteenth, which is the day that sort of celebrates the abolishment of
it was the day that
slaves.
The slaves got told slavery was over, but they missed the actual day that it was. They were told late.
So that I mean, he did make the move to go to DuSable to throw a sort of...
You can't come to my barbecue with Kool-Aid and think I'm going to just let you in.
I know, I get it,
but
there's no devil's advocate that says that maybe the governor is sort of saying this is important to the residents of the city of Chicago on the south side. I'm going to come be a part of it. I understand it. I may not be popular here, but I'm going to come be a part of it.
I'm not sure if Governor Rauner really knows how unpopular he is across the state.
How about in the black community?
He is not on the message board. He doesn't even get a post-it. He is done dealing. But here's the problem, though. You got guys... Who in the community that apparently I am the one black voice up in the, no, I am not in the community that threw their support behind him under the guise of, well, the Democrats haven't done anything for us. Well, now the Republicans haven't done anything for us. So you can sit on the rooftop of your church, or you can hide behind your flock in your gigantic church and try to convince people that so you can get an appointment from the state that this is the right way to do things when it is not. Governor Rauner is not well liked in the black community, man. I mean, I'm a black dude that does not like him. So I know if I don't like him, it's got to be at least 150,000 other black people that don't like him. And I like everybody.
Mario Smith is a commentator. He's a poet. He's a radio host. He hosts News from the Service Entrance WHBK on Thursdays. Also part of the Harper Court music series, which is going to be next week, Wednesday in Harper Court. Let's take a quick break. We come back. Let's talk about cold cases. This is important to you.
Yes.
We kind of teased it before the segment started. I want to get your take on this. Mario Smith in studio. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Mario Smith,
hey.
Our monthly visit with poet, commentator, all-around renaissance man. He's the host of News from the Service Entrance on WHBK.
And The Clock is the Enemy.
And The Clock is the Enemy,
on
the podcast.
Radio, yeah.
And also, he's going to be part of the music series, Harper Court Music Series, which is next week, Wednesday, at 53rd and Harper.
It's going to
be
fun.
Harper Court in Hyde Park. Let's do it on the phones. Paul. Paul, you're on the line. Paul, you got something to say about Governor Rauner being in the black community at DuSable Museum. Go ahead.
Hey, Justin, I'm listening to your guest, and he's dissing Bruce Rauner and really saying that he's somehow against the black community.
No, never said that. I said okay. He's not. I said he's against everybody. He's against the entire city of Chicago and this state by not passing that budget. You know, it's almost a year since the state of Illinois has had a budget. If he does not pass this budget, the damage that's already been done, not just in the black community, but in the city, will be amplified by the fact that the budget has not been signed. It has nothing to do with one community over another. But to come to DuSable is disingenuous and at best kind of sketchy and suspicious.
Like pandering? Like he wants a photo shoot?
He's not running for election. Why come? And then on top of that, the same day that he said he wasn't coming, he made a little side remark that, you know, I think we're going to run again in 2018. So
well, no. I think, Paul, you're still on the line. You know,
Yes. The
idea that the governor would go down for a campaign stop to talk on a day that's an African-American holiday when the African-American community is not loving the way that the budget stuff is going down. I think that's the point, but go ahead.
Well, first of all, you point out the African-American community. How should that be different than the rest of America?
Oh, but see, Governor Rauner is not the president.
How is that different than any other person, Latino or Asian? And why should they be treated differently? Right. And how are they treated differently? I struggle with this.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Thanks. I think the answer, and I'll let Mario talk, but the answer
too
is that...
Oh, you can speak for the black community.
No, but the black community is organized in a way that it's political, it moves as well, and it doesn't want Governor Rauner being able to come in and use it as a backdrop for... to say that he's governing the state of Illinois when a lot of his policies are actually almost
killing.
In direct opposition of the interests of that community.
And to Paul's point, you know what? You're right. This isn't one community over another. This is the entire city and the entire state that Governor Rauner is holding hostage by not signing the budget. Or even to make it better for Paul, by not sitting with the Democratic ruling legislatures and say, this is what I want to do. Let's work this out. We need a budget in Illinois. The numbers of people that are leaving the state are alarming. And they're leaving because the state is
coming. Mario, do you at all put any of the blame on Democrats? Like
absolutely.
If Mike Madigan tried to do the same thing to Sabo, would Father Flager say, get out of here?
Why are you here? You should be. They should be in session now, tonight, passing a budget. Not trying to jump on a
There is a Cubs game, so they got things to do. All right, let's talk about violence. School's out today. The Chicago Public Schools done. you tweeted out that watching from your vantage point as the kids got out of school today was alarming.
It was like Westeros. It was like Game of Thrones, man.
Let's talk about school. I mean, there's been a lot made about violence prevention programs, job training, jobs in general being cut for the summer because we don't have a budget in place. Do you think those things will have an impact on what happens on the streets of Chicago in the summer?
Yes. And I'm a little worried that there won't be money for cops to have to work overtime. And although that's a city thing, I guess, more than a state thing. I'm a little worried that schools may not open because they have no money. So they say. And this budget impasse is hurting the entire state and it's hurting everybody in it, not just one community or another.
All right, so let's talk about cold cases. Mm-hmm. This is near and dear to you because your friend Rudy was the woman who was gunned down, I guess, accidentally outside of Starbucks. It was, as we heard the story, about a month ago.
Yeah, 32 days ago.
She was coming out of a Starbucks, and she was unfortunately in the wrong place at the wrong time as a reputed gang member was next to her, or at least someone who was a target of a drive-by. They missed.
Mm-hmm.
They hit Rudy. Rudy was – you went to high school with Rudy.
Yeah, I went to Chicago Vocational. Talk about her. Yvonne Rudy Nelson didn't – I don't know if there was a bad bone in her body. The years that I've known her, she was nothing but – upfront and a peach and well-respected. People saw her when she walked into a room. It was almost like your big sister was coming in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whatever you were doing, if you were like cursing or talking crazy, you kind of straightened yourself up. You didn't want Rudy to be like to you. She has millions of friends, man. And she worked for the city for 14 years. And my problem is the day that she was murdered, the Chicago police held a press conference in the media center at police headquarters about a block and a half away from where she was shot, talking about how 140 people had been rounded up and it got them off the streets. Well, you missed one. And the one that you missed shot my friend in the chest. Now, the problem with that is 32 days later, the day of her funeral, ABC 7 reported that they had someone of interest in custody. Well, you can only hold a person for 24 hours. So that person isn't there anymore. So now 32 days later, there's nothing. Nothing. The family doesn't know anything. Friends don't know anything. Nothing. And as frantic as the city of Chicago's police department is to tell people what they're doing, it is really odd that in this particular case, they haven't said a word. There are cameras all over that neighborhood. The ballpark, IIT, that Starbucks has cameras in it. Why hasn't the police made a move to make this a priority, if for no other reason? Because it was so close to police headquarters.
Well,
it's troubling.
It's a classic story we hear in Chicago all the time of somebody. I mean, Chicago did mourn for Rudy in the
Absolutely.
Way that the day of and the day after. I mean, I remember being on the air hearing that, being like, oh, that's terrible.
Absolutely.
And then 2-3 days go by, maybe after the funeral, and the stories stop. Are stopped being printed, you know, and we always have this thing of what happens to the victims, what happens to the story once it's out of the headlines.
Well, you know,
and in this case, you've been following it and you've been sort of trying to come to an understanding of how the process works when going through.
Well, I absolutely want to know what happened.
Justice,
I
right.
want to know what happened, not just for Rudy, but there are hundreds of cold cases in Chicago in this year alone that are unsolved. I understand that the numbers are way up and there are only so many police that can do the job.
Right.
But when you can't tell me that every one of these is just non-solvable. There's just no solution to who did it. I have a hard time believing that.
Well, I mean, could it possibly be the fact that, high profile or high sort of publicity will make things move. I think of Tyshawn Lee, obviously the 9-year-old, was a 9-year-old
yeah.
kid that's in the alley. That's a terrible
but
story.
But I mean,
and
Janita
police...
Watkins was 6 months old. They're three-year-old kids getting shot. And it's like, oh, well, so-and-so was shot and the police have no one in custody.
Well,
and then they never do.
I guess I'll speak for the police. I find it hard to believe that they would not be interested in pursuing or finding the person. They probably have an idea who it is. They're trying to figure out how to go about pressing charge. I don't know what it is, but I doubt it's any sort of conspiracy where they just don't care.
No, I don't think it's anything like that. The point is, for me, though, 32 days, hundreds of cameras. Every one of those cameras has a different angle. There is no, I just can't wrap my mind around the fact that they don't know something. And for the sake of the family, tell them something. Don't leave them hanging for 32 days. And tomorrow will be day 33. I keep looking online, putting her name in. I got a Google search for her name. I have a rather news alert. Nothing. Talk to a friend of mine that works with CBS, too. My man, Brad Edwards. Solid dude. Nothing. He said the police stopped talking. That's alarming. Because if they're not talking about that, and it's a block and a half away from police headquarters, they're not talking about any of them. What do you need? More police? Goes back to Rauner and the budget. Because if there was more money for more police, maybe we'd be able to solve more of these cases. But there are so many cold cases in this city, it's alarming.
Well, keep us up to date. I mean, I'd love to follow up and make sure that the people who did this to Rudy are brought to justice, especially in the city of Chicago. And I know police are working on it, and it takes time. I don't know much at all. And maybe we can get someone from the police on to talk about how cold cases move forward and what stands in the way. That might be a good segment.
And I would like to be able, and I would like to say, first of all, thank you for letting me be on again. I don't know why this keeps happening, but I appreciate it. I am concerned that if it's a cold case for her and it's a cold case for all these families across the city, not just in the black community, but around this city, if people are driving on Lakeshore Drive at Balboa and Michigan getting shot, that's an issue. So it's a bigger issue than just the cold case thing. That's more of a societal thing. I just want to know who killed my friend. I want to know why she went to go get some tea and got shot in her chest. This is who did it, who did it, who did it.
Mario Smith is a poet and commentator. You can hear his show News from the Service Entrance on WHBK every Thursday. He's also going to be involved with the Harper Court Music Series, which is next week,
yes.
Wednesday at 53rd
yes.
in Harper in Hyde Park. Mario, always great to see you.
Shout out to the Promontory. Peace, y'all.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, Chicago comedian Dion Cole has a new Comedy Central special. It's called Dion Cole, Cold-Blooded Seminar, and it's premiering this weekend.
There was a middle seat open next to me. I ain't want none of them sitting there talking to me the whole damn flight. So I have to turn my blackness up. Oh, yeah, white people, that's something we do. It's called managing your blackness. See, white people, y'all can be white all day long. Black people can't be black all day long. Society don't play that. It's messed up. But we have to choose throughout our day when to be black and when not to be. It's crazy. That black dude you work with, that ain't how he really act. That is not the real James.
It's Cole's first hour-long special for the network, and it's going to air Saturday night at midnight. Dion Cole's having a great year, from writing and performing on Conan to playing Charlie on Black-ish to Steve Carell's Angie Tribeca to the latest Barbershop movie. Dion Cole is blowing up. It's a long way from getting up on stage at All Jokes Aside on a dare. Dion Cole, welcome to The Download.
Thank you so much. How you doing, brother?
Good, good. I'm very thankful that you had took some time out to talk to us this week. You know, obviously the news today and this week has been that the ultimate closing of Jokes and Notes, Southside Comedy Club at 47th and King. Talk about Jokes and Notes, and, you know, when you hear that news being out in L.A., what comes to mind?
Oh, man. Shout out to Mary Lindsay and Todd Chicago Comics. I mean, it's just one of them things, man, where, you know, you have to progress and you have to grow, you know. You have to, you know, look at what's been done and see what you can do better. And so, you know, making moves is a part of life. One door closes, another one opens. And, you know, hopefully other comics as well, they're about to fill the void of not having a very well ran establishment as far as to work material out and to do stand up. And, you know, I think that's needed in order for everyone to get their stuff together and, you know, become great like they supposed to be, you know. And that's what I think as far as from a comic side. And hopefully the comedy stays at a high level. Hopefully it does, instead of it becoming, everyone becoming bar comics. And that's what I don't want everybody to become, because you're performing for those people instead of having those people come into your world. Don't give the people what they want, have them come into your world. So hopefully that still remains. Chicago is, I mean, everyone knows, one of the greatest areas for stand-up. And we just want to keep that going. So Mary has made everyone, including myself, she's made a lot of great comedians' careers, and I'm quite sure her next move is going to be her best move, and I can't wait, which it's going to shock the world. It's going to be great what she's going to do.
Well, talk about the importance of having mics like that, open mics or comedy clubs, to up-and-coming comedians, because like you just mentioned, when you say, you know, the fear is that they'll just become bar comics, talk about what that means.
Well, bar comics are comedians that go into a rowdy bar and they say and do whatever they got to do in order to get people's attention. It doesn't mean they necessarily are there for comedy. It's like they're at a place where comedy is at. So therefore, they can talk, listen to music, mingle, smoke cigars, do whatever they want, because that environment isn't specifically made for comedy. So therefore, you'll have a harder time. Now, for a comic, instead of you doing the material that you would like to do, you would have to probably do other material in order to get people's attention, in order to get people to pay attention to what you're saying. You're going, you're performing, the blender's just as loud as you are, and people are coming in and out the door, and people's looking at people coming in and out the door. And there's so many distractions that it keeps you from focusing on what you should. I just don't want it to be that way, because then comedians are all start performing like that. And then once that happens, then you got a new generation of comics that's thinking that that's the right way to do comedy.
Right.
And it's really not. So that's what I mean by a bar comedian, but I don't really want everyone to be that way.
Talk about your career coming up in Chicago. I mean, I kind of teased at the beginning about getting up on stage as a dare. But talk about how important Chicago was for you as a stand-up comedian, you know, in your days of learning the craft.
It was very important because it was about originality. It wasn't like I was going out like, well, I want to tell jokes. It wasn't like that. I knew I had something to say, and I knew that I can say it in a unique way. And I was looking at how everyone else was delivering their material. It is some of the most unique comedians in the game. It's in Chicago. Muhammad, Corey Holcomb, D-Ray, and like this is another guy by the name of Flashlight. That's funny, and all these great comedians that came out of Chicago, man. Some who got breaks and some who didn't. And you know, like when I was coming up, there was a guy named James Hanna. He was a great writer. Shay Shay, fantastic writer and comic. And all these comics have their own identities and their own perceptions on what was going on in the world. And Duran Howard and Kenny Howe and Tony Schofield and, you know, the people that I looked up to. And, you know, that's what it was. And Godfrey was another great comic who had a unique way and a unique perspective. And now I think everyone is just trying to be funny. And it's nothing really unique. And don't get me wrong, it's a lot of great new comics that's coming in the game. I'm not saying that there isn't. But the majority of people coming in the game, they're just being funny. And that's it. Nothing could take more than that than just to be funny and tell jokes. You also have to let people know what kind of person you are.
Right.
You have to be believable about that. You know, you can't just be going on just telling jokes, you know. Like another comment that I like right now is Mark Henderson. He's hilarious, great comedian. And, you know, he writes, he's a great writer. I think he'd be great in late night. And he's doing his thing. Actually, I'll be in Chicago this weekend bringing some executives from TBS. And we're looking for diversity. We're looking for great comedians and looking for someone that we can possibly build a show around, hopefully. So, yeah, we'll be there this weekend, the 24th, at Jokes and Notes. And we'll be looking at an array of comedians and, you know, just trying to bring some diversity to TBS and TNT. And, and I think Chicago has that.
You've had such a great career on both sides, being in front of the camera and being on stage, but also as a writing career, writing for Conan and other places. I mean, there's a great story you tell about early on in your stand-up career getting called up for Def Jam Comedy and not having enough material. I mean, the idea that, you know, a set is, you know, the how far we've come. You've got an hour-long special here. But the idea of that it's more than 15 minutes. Talk about how important it is for a comic to be a writer as well.
That's what it's about. It's about being a great writer and then having a stage presence to deliver that material in a way that's unique, different, and has a very spinned perspective on certain things. You know, some things you have to go through in order to make it. You know, if it wasn't me not having enough material and getting kicked off the Def Jam tour, I probably wouldn't be the writer that I am today because that fueled me to become who I am. But, you know, you need people to push you as well. And I think that's one thing Chicago comics are lacking now. They're not looking up to no one. I mean, I think they are. I think they're looking up to comics like myself and Corey Holcomb and other great comics or whatever. And, you know, I think they're doing that. But there's no one there that's going to mentor them and get them going. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the problem, I think. I think, like, when we were in Chicago, like, Bernie Mac would come around all the time and, you know, come kicking. And just seeing him around just sparked the fire and everybody like, oh, like he's here now, like we can be like him.
Is that something that you feel like you want to take on that role for younger comedians to be I would love to be that
for Chicago comics, you know. But I think a lot of Chicago comics, they're kind of prideful sometimes. Like, I don't know if I'm an inspiration or not. To a lot of comics, I do hear that I am, and they tell me, man, you inspire me a lot, and this, that, and the third. But the majority of them, I don't hear that from. I don't know if I do inspire them or not. So I have no idea. But that was the thing when we were coming up. We used to tell Kenny Howell and George Wilborn and Dale Gibbons, and we would tell them, like, man, you inspire so much. We just want to be like y'all. We want to do like y'all. We, you know, we looked up to them. Now I think everybody's trying to act like they're really good, and they they work, they're chilling,
That sort of like, false confidence, right?
Yeah, it's like, no, if you, like, you need to pay homage to the people that paved the way for you, and then they'll reach back for you. But as long as you acting like you great already, then why would I book you?
Well, I mean, for you, I mean, you have been a trailblazer in the way that, I mean, you're a writer on late night television. I mean, obviously working for Conan O'Brien. Being a stand-up who makes that transition into a writer's room, which is arguably, I mean, those are writers that come from backgrounds at Harvard, or maybe they're already in some sort of a late-night sketch comedy kind of writing program or whatever it might be. There's not always that transition from stand-up to writer's room. Talk about that, because that's really also a trailblazing, especially for an African-American comedian.
Yeah, I mean, me being the very first African-American writer for Conan was, like, amazing. And, you know, just what I think it is the fact that there's the lack of opportunity. And if more African-Americans had the opportunity, if someone just chose them like I was chose, like Conan didn't have me submit any material or nothing that he just hired me because he had a good feeling. He had a feeling. It was a vibe that he had for me. And he was just like, I definitely would like to have you work for me, and he did. But if it wasn't for that opportunity, none of this would be happening because someone believed in me, you know, and that's what it has to happen. That's because someone believed in you. And that's why I was saying earlier about having some type of mentorship in Chicago. I mean, to have even someone believe in a comic to be like, man, you're funny, keep doing what you're doing, that goes so long, so it goes a long way for people. And so, you know, just that alone is great. So, I mean, just to have somebody there to help you and to push you along, that's another great layer too. And, you know, that's what I think everybody misses. And late night, as far as writing is concerned, if it wasn't for that opportunity, then none of this would happen. So, I mean, for me to also go from behind the camera to in front of it, it was a transition that was basically already there because, you know, I already had that instilled
in
me.
Yeah, you're on stage, right.
You know, yeah, for me being on stage, so.
How special is it to have this Comedy Central, you know, special that's coming up, the Cold-Blooded Seminar? This is your first hour-long for the network. You know, Comedy Central has been such a big part of stand-ups and putting stand-ups on television. How important is it for you? How special is it to be a part of this?
It's very special. It's my first hour special. Should have been out a long time ago. It's way overdue, but I've been so busy doing so many other things. But at the same token, timing is everything, and this is a great time to put this out in the midst of the season finale of Black-ish, the movie Barbershop, the premiere of Angie Tribeca. All of this within a 2-month radius was the timing was perfect to do it. So it's fantastic. Shout out to Comedy Central for giving me the opportunity and letting me get down and be free and do whatever I wanted to do. So it's been exciting, and I'm glad to have this opportunity.
The special airs this weekend, Saturday at midnight. It's called Dion Cole, Cold-Blooded Seminar. It's the first hour-long special for Comedy Central. Dion Cole, as he mentioned, I mean, a tremendous, tremendous couple months, if not the last couple of years. Dion Cole, everybody here in Chicago is proud of you. And continue the great work, and thanks for joining us tonight on The Download.
Thank you so much, bro.
All right, coming up, 312-981-7200. It's the worst. We are going to complain about the problems here in society for prizes. We've got tickets to give away. We've got some pizzas to give away. Get those worse in now, 312-981-7200. You know what's the worst? Trying to get Hamilton tickets. No, let me take that back. Watching somebody else trying to get Hamilton tickets on Facebook. The worst. taking snapshots and uploading the photo of the Ticketmaster site screwing you over. The worst. Tyler Green and Don Hall are here. Talk about Tyler's bad day.
I know what I'm going to say. No good, horrible day. Before we get to Tyler's bad day with his Hamilton tickets, I want to say it's the worst when you don't watch Game of Thrones. You don't care about baseball or basketball. You don't have any interest in getting $500 Hamilton tickets, but are on Facebook anyway. Yeah. That's the worst. Because I don't care about any of that crap, and that's and cats. Everything. I'm not a big fan of cats, so it just it's like and I can't pull away because it's Facebook. It's addictive. It's a drug. But for God's sake, find a different interest in your
That's
life, right?
Okay,
so you, Tyler, tried to get Hamilton
all right,
tickets.
Save
all
it.
Day.
Save it.
It's original.
We're gonna
it's breaking news. So
breaking news.
Is it breaking
let's
news?
Let's forward promote my monologue. That's gonna happen.
312-981-7200. What's the worst? We're gonna play the worst coming up here. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. It's Tuesday night, and it's time for the worst. This is where we collectively complain and bemoan about the problems and issues in our society for prizes.
Yeah.
312.
Yeah. Bing, 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 bing. Here we go.
312-981-7200. What's the worst? Don Hall and Tyler Green are in studio with me. They're the guys behind General Admission, the arts and culture podcast. They just launched a new episode this week. You can find it at generaladmissionchicago.com. Good to see you guys. Thanks
Back
for being here.
You.
You too, brother.
All right. And again, 312-981-7200. We're going to, Don and Tyler and myself, we're going to choose the winners tonight from the calls and texts that come in. What's the worst? Why don't we start tonight like we start every worst with Pete Zimmerman. Pete, how are you, my man?
Can you hear me? I'm wonderful. Yeah. Thank you. Justin, you know what the worst is?
What's the worst?
When the chip-to-dip ratio is off.
Okay.
When there's either too many chips and not enough dip.
Yeah.
Too much dip.
Yeah, because what do you do with the dip? What do you do if you don't have enough? If you don't have enough chips, what do you just lap it up with your finger? It's like that's I'm with you.
Yeah,
terrible.
There's nothing worse. There's nothing worse when you're using your finger.
Do you know what's the worst
for the dip?
You know what's worse? When Don's talking and he doesn't talk in the microphone, that's the worst.
It drives Tyler crazy our podcast.
Nobody can hear you. It's a radio
show.
It's a radio station.
So mad at me
radio.
With the microphone. I'm just talking.
Radio.
I don't care that there's
no,
people
Don's
around.
Real, man. He doesn't need mics.
I can project.
He can project. God. All right. why don't we start with you, Tyler? This has been a kind of frustrating day for you.
It's been a really tough day.
So why don't we talk about what you have brought to the worst tonight?
Well, I preface this by saying that there is a lot worse things going on in the world, but my fair listeners, our fair listeners, Justin's fair listeners, Hamilton, right? Mm-hmm. Musical swept the Tonys. It's brand new, amazing. All these things we've heard it all. Okay, so I go online, 10 o'clock, convinced. Got my husband's Amex card. It's my birthday present.
By the way, he actually called in this last night and said, "Is it okay if I come in at 11:30 instead of 10?" Because I need to buy Hamilton tickets.
No.
So he took an hour and a half off of work to do this.
Because I'm because I was coming to this show and working 9 hours. Anyway, so I go on, 10 o'clock, spinning wheel. Oh, two tickets. Great. $177 plus fees, $400. That's kind of a lot for theater. Great. Here we go. Let's continue. Crash. This repeats for like 2 hours. And then I get to work and the same thing happens.
Supposed to be working.
Fast forward to now.
Not working. Doing this.
This moment, I was just leaving work looking at the seating charts, and there are seats. Okay, Justin. So rest assured, people.
There are still seats available.
There are still seats. Now, the first 20 rows of the theater, $500. So it's debatable whether or not a night in the theater is worth $500. Okay? But then you've got all of these obstructed views and limited views. Why do you have so many seats in a theater selling them as obstructed views? Why are you selling the seats? Why are you building the theater? It doesn't make any sense.
So it's the worst when you pay $400 for a seat with a pillar in front of
you.
You
can't see.
That's what the worst is.
And everybody's
is.
Like, it's just columns. It's just poles. I'm like, I don't care what it is. I want to see the show that I paid $200 for. I've got people coming up. I'm thinking
they agree
loud.
With you. That is the worst. That is the worst.
It's obstructed the worst.
Obstructed view.
Obstructed view is the worst. Obstructed view while you're then your chip to dip ratio goes off. Why? Just kill yourself. It's over.
I can't stop thinking of ranch dressing.
It's over, my friend.
Ranch dressing and Lay's. They're not ranch dressing, but that ranch dip with Lay's. Oh, so good.
All right, Don, what do you got?
You know, I'll tell you what. It's similar. It's similar. The worst, and I didn't do this, but my niece and her friend came in town to do it. When you go to Soldier Field in the rain to see Beyonce, and they won't let you take your umbrella in so that they can sell you a $30 umbrella branded with Soldier Field. That is a load of crap. That is the worst scam I've ever seen. They were selling like $12 ponchos, and I literally gave my niece and her friend, my wife, I gave them my wife's umbrellas, and they had to leave them outside. Of course, they weren't
out
there.
In a trash bin.
Yeah. In a trash bin.
I was there. I just got rained on.
Yeah. What a scam.
You bought a ticket for a Soldier Field concert outside.
Total scam. So. That's the worst. That is the worst. That somebody's walking around with my wife's pink umbrella that just found it. So, or maybe they resold it for $30. I don't know.
Maybe they needed it.
The next night at Beyonce, they just put a logo on it. Like,
there you go.
Umbrellas, $45.
Exactly.
All right, let's go to the phones. 312-981-7200. Let's go to John. John, what's the worst?
Well, you know, between Chips and Hamilton, I was hopeful, and I know you guys like sports. Our fine USA soccer team got us there.
Yeah.
Hands delivered to them 4-0 right now, and they didn't play really well. Kind of horrible. It was the worst. Watching their performance.
There you go, John. Thank you. The worst.
Didn't know that was happening, so thanks, John.
That's a big game, and not a good performance for USA Soccer to lose to Argentina. They play Argentina tonight? 4-0, no good.
Argentina reminds me of Evita, the musical.
I would say that I would amend that worst, and I would say that the worst is when you get so excited for any sporting event, and you're excited, all the build up to it, and then your team gets blown out.
Yeah, that's
what's happening. Soccer 4-0 is a blowout. I mean, it's not even close. So the idea that you got all jacked up for a USA Soccer, like this is it, we're getting ready, this is a continent, we're taking on the continent, and then to get your butt kicked.
That reminds me of a time that I was at the Blackhawks, and I was there in fairly decent seats watching them, and they were losing quite badly, and these guys in front of me were just buying double shots
is the way to get
for
it,
like the whole game, right? And their bill was something like $300-$400, and then the team lost, and I'm like, now what are you gonna do, go home and just be sad and probably drink more?
I mean, I think the worst is the amount of money you pay for stuff like that, because the thing about it is I remember the Beyonce tickets were like, you know, $400 a piece, and you've got all these giant screens and all that stuff. I remember seeing Bruce Springsteen, and he was so small on the stage. He could have been anybody. I mean, he could have been any dude.
It was anybody, yeah.
You had to trust that, yeah, that was probably Bruce Springsteen, because there were no giant
megatrons.
For you
guys to be the host of the preeminent arts and culture podcast in town, and all you guys do are go see Beyonce and Hamilton.
I didn't see Beyonce. No. My niece did.
You did.
I would not pay $400. The only way I'm paying $400 is if the Beatles all came back to life. Then I'd pay $400.
All right, coming up, we'll continue the worst here. 312-981-7200. Keep the text coming. We'll read some text. Also, Jasmine and May, stay on the line. We will get to you when we return. 312-981-7200. It's the worst. Stay with us.
It's going down.
It's the worst here on WGN. It's the download. I'm Justin Kaufman. Don Hall and Tyler Green in studio. They're the guys behind the General Admission podcast. You can find it at General Admission Chicago. com. You guys just put out an episode. What was on this episode?
This was us talking to two very distinct visual artists, both painters, Cleveland Dean and Bruno Cerdo. And Bruno's sort of like modern Renaissance painting, and Cleveland, one of the things he does is he uses fire as his paint.
Oh,
and so it was very interesting to have these two gentlemen talk about art, talk about the art world, and sort of the finance. Tyler's big thing was, why does it cost so much? You know, because most art that's hung is, you know, 10,000, and he wanted to do it. And they kind of broke it down for us and talked about what that process is and why it costs so much.
That's interesting. It was
a good episode. It was fun.
GeneralAdmissionChicago.com. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Christy. Christy, what's the worst?
What's the worst? Last night, in the middle of the night, my dog had to go outside, mm-hmm. and I got up in the dark, and I broke my toe on my bedroom door.
Ooh. Oh, I'm so sorry. That's the worst.
And I just finished a six-hour shift bartending.
Oh, wow. Christy, that is literally, I think that's the worst. Like, I don't think there's
that
any.
Is the worst.
I mean, I guess you could die or hurt yourself even more, but the idea of breaking a toe.
Oh, yeah.
In the dark when
yeah.
you're.
Yeah, it's bad.
No.
Hey, Christy, right. Christy, did you get any Hamilton tickets today?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well,
just
the worst. Actually, the worst would be trying to be online to get Hamilton tickets yeah, and breaking break your toe in exactly the same place that you broke your toe last night. That's the worst, right?
Right. That's not happening.
No, it's not.
Christy, thanks. Hold on, hold on. I like Christy. That's a. That's,
yeah,
a good
that's
a front. It's bad.
That's pretty rough. That's pretty
Let's
rough.
Let's go to May. May, what? May, what's the worst?
Hi. The absolute worst is when people let their dogs poo on the sidewalk, and then they try to get it up with that plastic bag, and yep. it smears, and people have to walk in the smear.
I'm with you, May.
And then, you know, all they have to do is get some newspaper, and when the dog, you know, gets into that position, just
slide it underneath
the paper.
Yeah.
Underneath him, that will catch everything. And you pick the paper up and put it in a bag. I don't know why people don't yeah. think of that. And one lady, her dog had, like, diarrhea, and it was, like, mostly liquid. And she still tried to get it up with the bag, and she couldn't get all of it up, and it was yeah. just, like, all over the sidewalk.
All right.
I think the worst is just dog
Thanks,
diarrhea.
May. Thank you,
Dog
May.
Diarrhea is the worst, but, you know.
Yes.
All right. I agree with May. This was an issue I had last week. We talked about it, that, you know, the idea that you're walking, and then you're walking on smeared dog excrement is no good. Like, I hate that. I hate that more than anything in the neighborhood where you're just like, what is going on? Why is this smeared? Did you not clean it up? And May is going the one step further to go, the cleanup is what caused the
So I think
smears.
Most of the smears happen from people stepping in it.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is like, because most of the smears I see are big smears, and there's no big piece of plastic you used on that. Somebody took a dump, and I say somebody because it doesn't always have to be a dog. We're in Chicago. If somebody All took right. a dump and somebody cleaned it up and somebody stepped in it and they smeared it.
Personal experience?
Yes.
Yes.
I live in Wicker Park. Yes, it's a personal experience.
Right. My cat right now has decided, and I don't know why she's doing this. I think she's mad, but she keeps either throwing up or pooping. I can't figure out what it is in little spots all over the house where she knows she shouldn't be. Like, she's leaving a message for me or something, and yep. I don't know what it's about.
I'm so glad I have neither a pet or a child. I'm so happy that I have neither of those things, because they just pretty much sound like the worst to me.
All right, there you go.
There you go. Having a pet or a child.
All right, let's go to Jasmine. Jasmine, what's the worst?
All right, well, I'm starting this off by saying I am in high school.
Okay.
But you know what's the worst thing in the world right now? When I'm in my gym, in the pool for my gym period, and there's a fire drill while everyone is in the pool, and we have to get out of the pool, like, just like everyone in the school, go outside, but the difference is we're half naked and dripping wet.
Yeah. I mean, there, an argument can be made that if there was a fire, an actual fire alarm,
that
would
be
the situation.
Exactly.
They'd
be in the pool.
Yeah. I think they're doing that on purpose to be like, you know, it's not just organized. Oh, when we do a drill, you have to be in situations that are tough to get out of.
Well, if the roof collapses, then there doesn't matter if they're in
You're
water
still
or not.
In the pool.
No, but
yeah, but I'm just saying.
No,
I understand what Jasmine's saying, though. That is the
that
worst.
Is the worst.
The
it's
worst.
Embarrassing.
It's embarrassing, and it's no fun to be in your swimwear when you have to go in a fire drill.
So I like it, but swimwear.
The good thing was, though, at least it wasn't winter, so.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that would be the worst. That would be the worst if it was zero, sub-zero temperatures.
All right, thanks, Jasmine. Thank you for that. All right, so we're getting some good stuff here.
Yeah, yeah. And people have thought through this.
All right, let me go to the, okay. I know this. Shannon's got a good one here, 708. The worst is lying in bed at 2 a.m., hearing your cat coughing up a fur ball in the living room, knowing full well that in the morning you'll forget having heard that sound, and waking up the next day and stepping in the slimy grossness.
And then you smear it. You smear it right there.
It all comes first circle. Okay.
God.
Okay. 224 says the worst is knowing that 8,000 kids are going to be on Lakeshore. Or I don't think. I'm sorry. I'm such a Chicagoan. That's so funny. LSD is actually LSD acid. They're talking about the drug.
Oh, they're not talking about Lakeshore Drive.
I thought it was Lakeshore Drive as I'm reading. I'm like, oh, they just abbreviate. No, they're talking about the worst is 8,000 kids are going to be on LSD at the Cubs Park this weekend for the Fish Show. I don't know if that's true.
I don't know if that's true. I'm not sure if that's the worst.
Yeah.
If they get out of the stadium, it might be the worst.
Might be the worst that they're still doing concerts.
Yes.
All right, we got a good one. A good one. Here we go. This one is really good. 949. This might be a contender. The worst is when you call out of work for being sick. You call in sick so you can see the Cubbies on TV. And your coworkers come to your house with soup.
Oh. What do you do in that instance? Just splash water in your face?
Is the boss there? Because if the boss there, that's bad. If it's just your coworkers,
then what do you? You
kind of go, please don't tell on me. Right. Hey, nice soup. This is good. Hey, I got some beers. I don't know. Depends on the office you work in, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. 773 says the worst is trying to listen to WGN radio and bad weather cuts you off. Yeah, that bad weather's coming.
Yeah, that's supposed to be a big deal tomorrow.
Yeah, there's talk of it being the first sort of severe weather of the summer.
Okay.
And that's never good when it's hot and a cold front comes in. So
I was planning
go ahead.
I was planning on biking to work tomorrow, so I modified those plans.
There's supposed to be storms at every sort of day part. That's also what's going
to
make it
bad.
To
me, one of the worst things is when it's summer and you've got all your windows open and then you go and you're out for the day and then it has one of those flash flood things and you come home and everything you own is wet because of that. Yeah, that's the worst.
All right, let's go to Sue. Sue, what's the worst?
Hi, you know, I enjoy photography and artwork and so on, and sometimes I take a walk, like tonight, and I just find, you know, an interesting crack in the sidewalk, or, you know, I want to take a picture of the full moon, and the neighbors are looking at me like, are you taking a picture of our house, or the dogs are howling and all this, and I'm like, I'm just trying to mind my own business, man, and, you know, enjoy my passion.
Yeah, I can understand that, but I feel like I also would say, thanks for that, Sue. I would say that if it were me, if I'm the neighbor and I saw you focusing your camera into my bedroom window, I'd be like, meh.
I'd have a question.
Maybe, what are you doing down there?
Yeah.
Following my passion? Let's go to George. George, what's the worst?
I got to say the worst is when the Blackhawks get eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoff.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that, George. Thank you for that. And the worst is when, not only that, the first round of the playoffs, and you are forever sort of have to remember that because every single playoff series to the Stanley Cup, it goes for like two more months. So you forget completely that the Hawks were – you can't forget. Because you're like, okay, they got bounced from the playoffs, big deal, this will be over soon. But hockey takes, especially playoffs, takes so long that the Stanley Cup playoffs ended last week.
Mm-hmm. Really?
The Blackhawks were eliminated in April.
Well, there you go.
So the idea of having to live through that as a hockey fan and be like, every time, like, this could be us, or last year this was us, all the way through is tough. So, I understand that. But wait, we might have some good news tomorrow. The playoff, or the MVP will be announced, and there's some rumor that it could be Patrick Kane from the Blackhawks. So
Well, there you go. Mm-hmm.
All right, 312-981-7200. We're playing the worst here tonight. Don Hall and Tyler Green are here. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll read the text. We'll get to the phone calls. 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
What's going down, y'all? The worst come to my people's come first.
You know the worst come to the worst. When worst come to worst, my people's come first.
That's bad.
It's the worst here on the download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tyler Green and Don Hall in studio with me. They're the guys behind General Admission, the arts and culture podcast. They just put one out this week, generaladmissionchicago.com. How often do you guys put out the podcast?
We try to do it every 2 weeks for 12 episodes. So we've got another one coming out in about a week and a half.
What's going to be that one?
There's a woman here in Chicago named, her name is Allison Flowers.
Don't disrespect my listeners. She was a guest on the Big Table.
Oh, was she? Okay, there you go. There you go.
Don't disrespect Download Nation.
Pardon
de moi. Sorry, Dyer.
It's him. You're looking at me when you say the disrespect thing. I said nothing.
I'm joking.
Yeah. Anyway, so for those of you that didn't listen to that episode on the Big Table, she is a journalist, an investigative reporter who looks into exonerated individuals, and wrote a book about the exonerees that she's covered and called The Exoneree Diaries. So we talked to her about that book, but we're an arts podcast. So my big question was, can journalists, can investigative reporters be artists?
Yeah.
And her response was actually pretty awesome, which I'll save for the episode.
My questions were mostly, how do you get a book written?
Yeah.
I mean, because that's the thing. It's like, how do you get somebody to say, I'm going to publish your book in this day and age where you can't make money on a book?
Yeah.
You know, it's
you guys, you know who should, I mean, we could talk offline. I've had so many authors on who could answer that question. We had a great conversation with Stacey Ballas.
Mm.
She writes a lot of, she writes what's like a genre of almost like romantic comedy meets food. It's like almost like a genre now, like culinary love stories.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a genre? Really, no, but it's interesting. Yeah, there's like it's almost like foodie. It's foodie lit.
Okay.
That's what they call it, foodie lit.
Foodie rom-com.
So it's like he looked right at me when he said that.
The heroine or the protagonist is someone in the culinary industry.
Okay.
You know, it's about chefs. It's about pastry chefs, her books. Anyway, she's written 11 books. Should be interesting to talk to her about how she actually does it, and she has deals and the whole bit. So we talked a lot about that. So anyway, 312-981-7200. Sandy, what's the worst?
It may not be as bad as some of the rest, but I think Flo needs to retire.
Flo.
Flo from Progressive Insurance.
Oh, the Progressive, the obnoxious Progressive lady.
Thank you.
She is, in fact, the worst. Yeah, she's the worst.
She needs to go.
I don't know. I see it's on the other side where I'm always like, every time I go, good for her. Good that actress is getting money. Like she's getting like because you know they run through actresses and actors in Hollywood.
Oh yeah.
And they never get anything. So to get a recurring role and to have it last as long, I'll take the lame writing and stuff like that. Good for you, Flo.
Yeah, well, I bet just like Daniel Radcliffe is always going to be Harry Potter. I don't think that woman's going to be. Gosh, you know, I was Flo for 45 years. It's just not a. That's not a badge of honor.
She's the new. Can you hear me now?
She is.
Affleck.
Where's the beef? Thanks, Jackie.
Where's the beef?
Or thanks, Sandy. Thanks, Sandy. Jackie's on the line now. Jackie, what's the worst?
The worst is when you have someone you care about that has halitosis and you don't know how to tell them. You can't fix it with a mint. This is ongoing.
That's bad. Is there a halitosis doctor, like a mouth doctor or something?
I think so.
Ear,
but I mean, how do you even send someone to that?
I guess, I wish it was like an iTunes gift card.
You know, an intervention.
You know, Jackie,
like
once...
an anonymous Hallmark card?
The thing is, I had a friend of mine a long time ago that was in the theater I was with, and he smelled bad. He didn't shower. He really smelled bad. And the actors in the company said, listen, he smells bad, and he stinks all over us, and if you don't kick him out of the show, we're going to quit. And so one morning I called him up and said, hey, you want to come have breakfast with me before rehearsal? And he said, yeah, sure. I said, great. So you'll take a shower, and you're going to wear clean clothes. He was totally insulted. And I said, dude, you stink, and nobody wants to work with you because you smell like bad, really bad.
My favorite part about this story is you set it up like you're creatively going to deal with this.
Yeah,
and all it turned into was a direct attack.
Yeah, well, that was the way. It's like, hey, honey, hey, friend.
So essentially, Jackie, what you need to do is
these mints.
Hey, I'd love to have some mint because you have bad breath.
There you go.
Something's got to give because I keep saying, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, my breath must be bad. And they keep going, no, it's not. They're not getting it.
So you just got to be direct, Jackie. You just got to say, wow.
I don't know about
that. Did you just eat a foot? Woof, that's awful. And, you know.
Did you just eat a foot?
Oh my Thanks, God. Jackie. That's good.
That's the worst.
I love it. Here's what I did. Called him and I told him.
Yes, that's pretty much it.
All right, here we go. 773 says, the worst is when you run into your longtime no-see ex-girlfriend at your worst looking day of the year. From bad hair to mismatched socks. So they look bad.
They look bad or you look bad?
You look bad.
Okay, and that matters? They're the ex.
Yeah.
Why do you care what they think what you look like? You should be like, hey, I don't care what I look like now because I don't even have to dress up for you. Right. I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know.
You have the biggest smile on your face right now. Why?
I don't know. I'm having fun on the download.
The worst is trying to return something without a receipt. You only get store credit and the last sale price if you're lucky.
Ooh.
I hate that.
I do. I hate that.
Put that up near the top.
That's the worst.
Seriously.
Yeah, that's
so annoying.
Bad.
It's your money. You return it. You want to return it.
Yeah,
why can't you store credit?
Because what the reason that they have to do that is because scammers have taken advantage of the system.
That's true. And that's the other reason that Hamilton tickets are so expensive, right?
Exactly. The reason that you're fighting on Ticketmaster is because there are people who are trying to buy those so they can resale. That scammers ruin everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. That's one way of putting it, sure.
Sure. All right. 312 says the worst is when people on your Facebook try to sell you something.
Yeah.
I don't want your overpriced mascara, candles, lotions, or fake jewelry. Leave me alone.
What kind of friends do you
have? I've never had that happen
those
to me.
Those are robots.
I've never had a friend in my life that tried to sell me mascara or lotions. I mean, if Tyler's my friend on Facebook, if suddenly he Facebooked me and said, would you buy this lotion? I would go, what are you talking about?
Those are Facebook ads that Facebook puts on.
Yeah, those aren't your friends that are selling you lotions.
I think I'll accept the friendship from Revlon.
I'll like that page.
Mark Revlon, yes. He has so many mutual friends of mine.
815 says the worst is when you try warning your fellow drivers of a pending speed trap by flashing your lights. Classic move.
Yes.
And then you look up to see the cop is actually driving behind you. Yeah, that's
pretty bad. Yeah. Now, see, I think the worst is that when you get pulled over by a policeman and they you get double teamed in the way that you're going to get a ticket and they're going to lecture you. It's like, do me a favor. If you give me a ticket, then save me the lecture. I don't need to be told how stupid I am.
I would love to
just
be the
give
cop
the ticket.
That pulls you over. I mean, that would be...
It's a bad scene for me. It's always sure. bad for me, and it's a
I
very
would say,
lucky
and I have very little experience with this, but it has happened. I got once at the worst, and they give this one away, is getting pulled over from the front. I got pulled over by a police officer in front of me because he felt like I was driving too fast behind him.
That's nuts.
Yeah,
it was like he intuited it.
It was a lot like the beginning scene of Super Troopers.
Yeah,
where he's just like, I don't know what's happening here.
What did you do? What did you say?
I go, what are you doing? He's like, I sped up to get away from you, and you still are behind me.
Oh, clever!
And he's like, that you're driving too fast. If I'm going 85, and you're still here, you're driving too fast. But then he only gave me like a lecture because he really doesn't have
but
any.
You didn't get a ticket.
Yeah, because he doesn't have any reason to do that.
I think that's fine. If you're going to get the lecture, awesome. If you don't get a ticket, but if you're going to get a ticket, don't give the lecture.
You guys want to know what the worst is?
What's the worst?
When you're 16 years old and your high school starts a musical theater program, you get really excited about it because you're like going to be able to do musicals. Mm-hmm. And your audition song is This Is the Moment from Jekyll and Hyde. And you're driving down a really long road in the middle of nowhere and you're singing at the top of your lungs, This Is the Moment. You know that song? Nobody probably knows the song, but no,
you're the only
song.
Person that thinks this is the worst because you're the song. Only person that's ever experienced this.
And then I got pulled over going 80 and a 40. And it's still on my record. It's the only thing on my record.
Did you
and
sing
I said,
the rest
and he
of the song?
Said, he said, do you know why I pulled you over? And I said, I think I was going pretty fast. He goes, well, why were you going so fast? I said, do you want to know the real answer? And he said, son, tell me the truth. And I said, I was singing a Broadway musical in preparation for an audition. Turned around, walked to his car, came back, gave me a ticket to
$300. The answer should have been, you want to know the real reason? I want to know the real reason. Because I am Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
This is the
and
moment. Then,
yeah, there you go. Sing the song.
Go into it.
I mean, he's going to get a ticket anyway. At least you could sing the song for him.
Arrested me. At that
Are you
point.
Okay, Tyler?
I just went back to
him. He went back in time, and he's traumatized.
Let's go to Kelly. Kelly, what's the worst, Kelly?
My personal worst. And, hey, I'm in Kansas, by the way. I wanted to tell you guys.
Nice.
Thanks for calling.
All the time. I love you guys.
Oh, thank you.
My personal worst is when I've had a long, hard day at work, and I come home at 5 o'clock thinking, oh, I cannot wait to eat my leftovers from the best Mexican restaurant in town, and I get in there, and they're gone.
Oh, no.
The damn kids ate them.
I said that damn earlier. Kids. Pets and kids, the worst.
Yeah, they got to go.
Kelly, thank you for that, Kelly. I like Kelly. That's a good
that
one.
That was a good Kelly's one, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing I will say is I'm from Kansas, and the best Mexican restaurant in Kansas is not a good Mexican restaurant. I'm just saying.
You're really going to give like a shout-out. It's on Route 12,
no,
and it's
no,
called
No, no, the best Mexican restaurant in Kansas is not All a right. good Mexican restaurant.
312-981-7200. We'll get to the rest of the texts and phone calls when we return here on The Worst. Stay with us.
What's going down, y'all?
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Playing the worst. We got our winners, but we're going to read the texts that are coming in. 312-981-7200 for Kristen. This is good for Kristen Decker here at WGN. She's got a worst. She went out to West Chicago tonight to the drive-in movie theater there. She drove it from the suburbs, and there was an hour-plus wait. And after 2 hours, they finally said we're at capacity, and she was turned away.
Ooh. Yeah. Because that's just sitting in your car for 2 hours hoping.
So take your Hamilton.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I didn't know drive-in movies still existed, so that's illuminating for me.
They're cool.
They're cool. They're very cool.
Yeah, I love drive-in.
All right, here we go. Yeah. Let's go through some of these texts. The worst are people that are only happy when they're miserable and complaining. That's the whole premise of this show.
Yeah, that's the premise of Facebook. Are you kidding me? You know, social media wouldn't exist if it weren't for that.
That's true. That's true. Okay, I'm going down the list here. There's one about having the flu and vomiting in the toilet. We'll skip that.
Yummy.
Yeah, exactly. Oof. Here's one for you, Tyler. Worst is when you're buying Hamilton tickets and it's taken right from you during when you're trying to pay for them.
Yeah, that happened to me. I think what they're saying is that
they
say you've got it and they're in the cart and they say they go into the order page and then it says, oh, I'm sorry, the map has closed or crashed or something. You know, I mean, I'm over it now. I mean, this has been a great therapy session.
When you've got
400,000
people all trying to fit themselves through the same doorway, some people are just not going to get through.
Well, Don, maybe this is for our generation, a little bit older than Tyler here, but we were talking about it earlier about, you know, for us, if I wanted to go see the Rattle and Hum tour,
yeah,
you'd pull the old landline and you just keep hitting the number and it would be a busy signal after busy signal after busy
signal. I remember waiting in line at Sears to get, I think, Creed tickets.
and there was
a bunch of people there.
Oh, my God. There are so many things wrong with that statement.
Who had, like, straggly hair. And they're like, I'm like, what are you guys doing?
Tyler,
are you going to see Creed? And they were like, no,
podcast.
We're going to see Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. And I was like, what's that? And then I got my Creed tickets, and they all didn't get their Crosby,
you understand
Stills,
we run
Nash,
an arts,
Young.
An arts podcast. You're destroying any credibility we have.
Yeah, it was like 13.
Let's keep going here. 312 says, when you realize that you left, the worst is when you realize you left your cell phone in the car that you just dropped off for repairs. When you go back to get it, the repair shop is closed and your car's locked inside 5 feet in the air on the lift with the phone still inside. And it's still there, so this text is being sent from my son's phone. That's funny.
But the good thing is you have access to your son's phone, so you can see what he's been up to, and then have a man to man, heart to heart talk standing outside the repair shop. And becomes a Ben Stiller film.
Who are you texting?
Yeah.
815. The worst is that someone apparently stole my son's fish tickets, about 300 for four tickets, and Ticketmaster won't do a thing.
Well, I don't understand why they
would
do anything.
I don't know. How do you steal tickets? Is that like a fishing kind of thing?
Fishing,
like,
nice.
Yeah, I mean, were they like
yeah,
like
that's
hard,
what I'm
ticket, like,
it seems like if you're going
tickets?
Through Ticketmaster, yeah, I don't
digital
think,
tickets.
You know, that's the thing, digital tickets. So if he must have bought the tickets,
and then somebody like a Russian hacker came in and like got them.
I don't know. It's like,
I'm gonna suggest that her son may be lying.
I'm going to suggest that perhaps.
Hey, that's a different show. Let's move on.
Check his sock drawer.
Yeah, 847 says when you're chipping paint because you're bored and a chip goes deep under your fingernail.
Ow.
Yeah.
708 says Donald Trump's hair.
Well, okay, you know, that goes without saying.
I don't know if I did this one. I like this one. 708. According to my mom, summer solstice is the worst because it means every day has less daylight hours than the one before. That's kind of sweet.
Poetic.
It's poetic, but for a 50-year-old man, that just means more sleep for me.
Yeah,
thank you.
Right. All right. Let's see. I think that's it. Yeah, that's it. Okay, good. All right. So we got our winners. The winners tonight. All right. Third and second place are going to get a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. We've got two of those for third and second. First place, a pair of tickets to My Son the Waiter, a Jewish tragedy playing at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts from July 7th through August 7th. It's 90 minutes of nonstop laughter about the story of one man's lengthy struggle to make it as an actor in New York, starring Brad Zimmerman. Get tickets by phone at 847-673-6300 or online at northshorecenter.org. All right, so we got our winners here. Number three. All right, number three comes from 949.
That's not annoying at all, Don.
I'm just doing drum roll.
No,
a little drum roll. Yeah,
Do
you have
a
sound effect or something?
No, I like this.
There you go.
Real.
Blooming.
The worst. All right, third place goes to the worst is when you call off work for being quote-unquote sick so you can watch the Cubbies, and your coworkers come to your house with soup.
Yeah, yeah.
That is the worst.
Hopefully now you it's got a good
pizza.
Soup.
Now you got a pizza for the next time you call.
That, there
you,
exactly. Tell your
all
friends
all right, second,
stay.
Second place tonight also gets a pizza gift certificate. This goes to Kelly. Kelly from Kansas, who complained about her kids eating her leftovers.
There you go. And you know what? The second worst is getting Lou Malnati gift certificates when you live in Kansas.
Well, she could probably figure out how to get it. Yeah, exactly. She's probably not going to get it. All right. And our first place tonight, this one comes. This is literally the worst. This is Christy. Christy's on the line. Christy, I hope your toe is doing okay. It broke her toe when she tried to take her dog out last night. Christy, congratulations. You're the winner.
Yay.
Thank you. Awesome.
So at least it takes a little bit of the pain away.
I'm going to also throw in, just for fun, the Hamilton tickets I didn't get. It'll be fine. We'll go on a date together.
We'll go. That's right. Christy. Okay.
And don't resent your dog. Do not resent your dog. It's not your dog's fault that you broke your toe, but I know you feel that way.
It kind of is.
Yeah, yeah.
Does your dog recognize your pain?
Not at all.
Because dogs can sense pain in humans, and they're empathy. No, they're not. No, they're not. They're just dogs. No, they just want to eat and sleep and
go outside.
Lick themselves. That's all they want to do. So there's no empathetic.
Well, Christy, congratulations. You get the tickets. Stay on the line. Thanks for playing tonight. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
All right. And thanks to you, Don Hall and Tyler Green.
Thanks.
General Admission is the Arts and Culture Podcast. GeneralAdmissionChicago.com. Go listen to it, guys. Until next time, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
That's going to do it tonight for the download. Tomorrow night, former Illinois Governor Pat Quinn is at the big table. Talk to him about his time in public service here in the state of Illinois. Also about his new movement to put term limits on the mayor of Chicago. Talk with him coming up. That's tomorrow on the download.